Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Things are getting dark, my friends. Today, the January 6th committee put out a list of people for whom they demand the private records of, and it includes tons of prominent Trump supporters, activists, I think it's what, members of Congress even, right? Well, I'm looking over and the person nodding at me is one of the people on the list. Getting ready for that gulag, Jack.
I am on the official regime enemies list. It is not the first time I have made a regime enemies list. I have so many people I need to thank for allowing me this moment. But in all seriousness, this represents a turning point, right? This has gotten, and for me and for my family, you know, I've had conversations with, you know, with my wife, who's actually here tonight, and my parents. You know, what does this mean going forward? Because here's the thing: is that this is a first step.
This is overwhelmingly it's Democrat, and I don't think it's fair to say Republican because you got like Kinzinger and Cheney.
Yeah,
but it's establishment authoritarian. It's Jack Posobiec. I mean, it's a huge list. You've got Alex Jones, you've got Steve Bannon, you've got Scott Pressler.
Donald Trump, his entire family, a huge slew of Trump officials, to include Kash Patel, who, if anyone has seen Plot Against the President, knows what Kash did behind the scenes. So he's been put on the list, by the way, to neutralize him. So that puts him in a bind that he can't now go and operate out. You've got people that were part of the administration, people are in and around the administration. It's basically, if you are a public Trump supporter, you have now been put on this list. And they are now requesting, and I say requesting, it is a subpoena for your private communications between April 2020, all the way back April 2020, wow, forward through January 2021.
We'll definitely get into all of the nitty-gritty details, but suffice it to say, wow, man, this is the biggest red flag. It is a 20-foot red flag raising, you know, on top of a building. This is not just like, hey, man, things are, oh, that's crazy. I mean, you know, people want to criticize me for saying things like civil war or balkanization. The government just targeted, I mean, some of the names on this list are like run-of-the-mill Twitter activists, and they're demanding the private details of these people. This is how it begins. So we got to talk about that. We got to talk about, you know, vaccine mandates and lockdown stuff. Plus, we'll bring up Australia a little bit because they're doing those camps. But I we have a lot. There's a lot going on, but I feel like this opening story is just, it's the biggest story of maybe the past, of our generation, in fact. A list was put out by the U.S. government targeting political activists, dissidents. It's freaky, man. But we're also hanging out with Daniel Turner. You want to introduce yourself?
Daniel Turner, Power of the Future. I think this is fifth time back on the show, yeah, and it's great to be here. Yeah, so thank you for having me on again.
You guys went on a trip,
yeah,
to Alaska.
We did, yeah.
So we were like, you know, we should have you guys come in and talk about energy independence and obviously what's been happening in the U.S. with Biden's policies. And then the day you're supposed to come, we get this list drop. Jack's on it, and we're like, wow. But so we'll get into that stuff.
That trumps a little bit. Trumps.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You can't say circle back now either.
No. Oh, yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's stolen.
But we'll get into all this stuff for sure. Man, this is heavy stuff. We got Ian.
Is this confirmed it's a government list? Because I'm seeing it's from this dude, this journalist, put this list out.
It's Kyle Cheney. It's from the January 6th committee.
Yeah, this is the January 6th, the select committee, commission that they've set up for the investigation into the January 6th, you know, it was a riot at the Capitol, and they're now targeting. And keep in mind that the vast majority of the people on this list, I have to go check it again, were not participants, right, or members in any way
weren't there
of what happened there.
It's an excuse, this and the FBI.
This is moving the chains. This is moving the chains
Patriot Act
forward.
Let's
say we'll get into
there's
it.
So much, there's so much. We got Lydia.
I am pushing buttons in the corner. I'm going to be super quiet today because I am really ready to listen to what's going on with this weird and crazy list and why Jack's on it. What did Jack do?
Don't forget, go to timcast.com, become a member. We're going to have a bonus member segment coming up as we do Monday through Thursday. If you're a member, you get access to that. And your support helps fund our journalism. And you'll also get an ad-free experience. But don't forget to like this video, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. Now let's talk about the apocalypse. From CNBC, January 6th committee demands a huge trove of Trump White House records. Burying the lead here. This is the official reporting from CNBC. But what they're not telling you, as much as the key point is, the House committee investigating January 6th assault on the Capitol formally demanded records related to at least 30 members of former President Donald Trump's inner circle. What they don't include in this is that the list includes a ton of other people. We're talking like run-of-the-mill activists. We're talking about, look, you got Scott Pressler. Why is Scott Pressler on this list for a demand for records? Scott Pressler is an activist who registers Republicans to vote and cleans up garbage. What does he have to do with January 6th? You got Alex Jones, Owen Schroyer. I don't even know who some of these people are. Do you guys know who Tracy Diaz is? No disrespect. Negative. I don't know who that is.
Mm-hmm. That's Tracy Beans.
Oh, on Twitter? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't even know. I mean, was Tracy even there?
I have no idea.
So all of these names on this list, these are the official demands. They want all of these names. Look at this one. They say they want all documents and communications within the White House on January 6, 2021, relating in any way to the following, and they say the January 6 rally, the march, Donald J. Trump, Sarah Matthews, Hope Hicks, Mark Meadows, Dan Scavino, Pat Cipollone, Mark Short, Patrick Philbin, Eric Hirschman, Stephen Miller, Greg Jacob. I mean, it's everybody. It's Trump's admin. You've got Kayleigh McEnany. Mm. Then you go down. I think the scariest thing about this is when they start naming activists. From April 1st, 2020 through January 20th, 2021, all documents and communications concerning the 2020 election and relating to the following individuals. And that's where we see, you know, Ali Alexander, Brandon Strzok, Rose Tennant, Vernon Jones, Michael Flynn, Alex Jones, Owen Schroyer, Scott Pressler, Jack Posobiec, Angela Stanton King, George Papadopoulos, Mark Burns, Roger Stone, George Flynn. I mean, I don't even know, Enrique Tarrio. Michael Kodry, I don't even know who some of these people are, but these are not politicians.
Katrina Pearson.
Who's that?
She was the spokesman for the Trump campaign in 2016, chief spokesman.
And were these people there?
No.
Why do they want communications going back a year before?
Which, and keep in mind, this is not about January 6th. What it says, and my legal team has been over this with a fine tooth comb, what they're requesting for. If you look at this specific subsection where it names, you know, kind of the activists, it doesn't even mention the actual January 6th event itself. It just says all documents and communications concerning the 2020 election from April to January 20th. So essentially, if you had any comment whatsoever, any communication whatsoever with the government, from that entire, it's almost a year that they're asking for of the private records, personal communications that they are trying to subpoena. This has nothing to do with January 6th. No, and I'll tell you very quickly what they're trying to do with me, and I know exactly what they're trying to do with me, is they are trying to go after my White House sources. They want to know who it is that I've been in communication with at the White House that, of course, is being done in a way where I'm keeping them private. They're giving me information. It's a network of people that send stuff to me and then I get it out, right? They know that this has been a thorn in the side of the Biden administration because there are some people that are even in the Biden administration that are looking at this. They want to get into my records and they want to get that out. Well, I'm here to say right now to Nancy Pelosi and anybody else, you're not getting it. You're not getting my sources. You can send whatever you want to me. You can do whatever you want to me. I'm not giving it up because these people are patriots. They are telling me the truth. They're telling me the truth about what's going on when it comes to COVID and the government's response. They're telling me the truth about what's going on the ground in Kabul. They're telling me the truth about what's actually going on behind the scenes at the White House, as opposed to the lies that you people are putting out in your press briefings. And so if you want to come for it, you better be ready.
This is a
you
this
absolutely
is,
better be ready.
And your stand is admirable, and they're going to come after you. And I and you're a hero for standing up to them. This is a twofold, in my opinion, a process. The first is to punish those people who were on the wrong side. This is to punish them, you specifically, the people on this list. This is the scary part of using political power, is to punish your enemies. But the second part also is to send a warning for people in the future. Don't join the wrong side, because this is what's going to happen to you. This is meant to silence and scare people who want to get politically active. The only reason why I didn't go January 6th is because, like, I had something on the farm. It was a two-hour drive. I think it was cold and raining, and I kind of actually felt bad. I was like, you know what? I should be there. There's like 40,000 people. But like, I just can't, I can't make it. I honestly couldn't make it. And it was like, I can't. But what if, you know, how many people would have made the same decision? And that is to say to people like me, next time there's a rally like this, don't go, Daniel, because you look what they'll do to you.
Owen Schroyer just got charged. He was released. I guess he can't talk about it. But so the way this works is they're making a demand for internal government documentation on these individuals. That's correct, Jack?
Right. So what it is this is the first step in the process. What they're doing now is they're going for internal government documents that would have been held under the Trump administration as pertains to the Presidential Records Act, as well as anything else that might be on file regarding this regarding the election. At least there's different subsections and there's different types of things that they're asking for different groups of people. And so, but by and large, it's a letter to the National Archivist. So what that is all those records. So when you go to a presidential museum and you'll see that they have the entire records of that administration there. If you go to, the Kennedy Museum or the Roosevelt Museum. And so what they've done now, obviously Trump doesn't have a museum yet up. Obama doesn't even have his museum up yet. He's getting some legal trouble with that. But what they do is the National Archivist will set all of those records aside. So then the question becomes, does and will Trump come back? And I think they know what's going to happen is that he'll exert what's called executive privilege over either all of these records or a portion of these records. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that's where the politics comes in, and they're going to demand, well, hey, these people were outside the administration. Like myself, I wasn't a member of the administration. I was working for One American News at the time, who I actually did have a phone call with today, and we, we talked about everything, and they said, we got your back, Jack.
Now, I have a trivia question for you. Yeah. If you wanted to avoid the Presidential Records Act, and you set up a separate email server, in what room of your house would you put that server?
The basement.
The basement bathroom.
Right, the basement bathroom.
Oh,
That's exactly what this was. Yeah, that's how you bypass it.
That's actually a great way of explaining this.
You set up jackposobicworld.com, and you have everyone, and I am Steve Johnson at Jack Posobiec, and we all use this. And it's run out of my basement. And that way, when the big power of FOIA comes in and says, we want to see your records, you say, I'm not using any government records.
To be fair.
I'm using
Hillary Clinton's server. Hold on, I got to fact check.
That was the whole purpose of it, to avoid this process.
Daniel, we have to fact check you, okay? This is fake news. She was just, those emails were yoga.
That
stuff.
Was yoga.
Yeah, it was yoga.
Her daughter's wedding.
I guess she's not doing the yoga that much.
You know, see, we all understand.
Exactly.
Yeah, Hillary was just talking about yoga.
So she had sent 30,000 emails
about her daughter's
server to avoid government FOIA requests.
Exactly for this purpose.
Because when an activist, partisan group gets together and they decide that they want to expend it's a complete overreach, a massive overreach of political capital and government capital where they want to go into people's private lives like this. This is one way that if you are somebody like Hillary Clinton, who's running these off the books operations, we saw that what Sidney Blumenthal was running around Libya right before the invasion and all of this, right? That she's able to do that, mixing classified information in and out. But if you're someone, and that's totally fine when you're Hillary Clinton. But if you're someone in the Trump administration, right, imagine if, Donald Trump had a private email. Another guy doesn't use email, but, we know what would happen. This is what happens when you're on the other side of that. They will come after you with the full force of the federal government. And what I've been told from a lot of people is, okay, that's the Presidential Records Act. Mm. This is just step one.
Yeah.
Well, Jack,
this is not going to end with this.
Have you given any thought to what job you'll be doing in the gulag?
Yes. yes, as a matter of fact, I have. So I have already picked out my Gulag job, and, you know, it's already taken, and but it's actually going to be providing a service to everyone else, you know, who's on the list, and probably everyone in this room who will be there with me.
Especially Ian.
Yeah, well, he'll be the graphene engineer.
Jack will be playing bass.
And so I'll be playing bass, yeah. No, so I'm going to be providing the Mandarin lessons for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I'll be able to teach you up in Mandarin. We'll all be able to learn very quickly. We'll try to get characters. I know it's Daniel, you know, you might be in the remedial class.
Yeah, that's fine. That's
but
fine.
That way.
I'll be working for Nike. I'll be making sneakers.
Exactly. Yes. You'll yeah. be very happy. Right. Yeah. And that way we'll be able to communicate with the guards. So it'll actually be quite useful right. for us.
That's good planning ahead, Jack.
That's great. Yes. Yeah.
How do you say
yeah.
sounds effing awesome in Mandarin? Can we say that on YouTube?
All
right. All
right. Great. You know, we joke about this stuff, but this is not, this list clearly is not about January 6th.
No.
No.
It's calling for records related to the election. What they want to do, what they've been trying to do, which every step of the way has been, they've just literally gutted and mutilated the American Republic from the first impeachment to the second impeachment to the constant harassment to the lies in the media. They hated Trump so much that they were willing to do anything.
And by the way,
it's not done though. So we're doing lists now. Hmm. I'll just say this right now. Every step of the way, since going back to 2017, 2018, I've been talking about some kind of civil conflict, civil war. I've said, I see no reason for this to de-escalate. Now, I have no problem saying right now, for all I know, everything just slows down. People finally say, I'm done with the conflict. I don't want to be fighting anymore. And everyone shakes hands and we move along. All of a sudden, Republicans, Democrats hugging in the hallways. But I don't see any reason for that to happen.
No.
Then not only do we have a shootout last weekend in Portland between left and right wing groups, you now have predominantly Democrats. Let's be real. Kinzinger and Cheney are not anything other than Democrats with a Republican for a name. They're coming out and saying, we want to know about the election. We want to know about what their strategies were, their campaigns. Yeah. We want to know what the Trump administration, any of these people, and the government were talking with these people about. Scott Pressler, the guy who cleaned up garbage in Baltimore. And you know, here's what's going to happen. Here's the first step is the list, right? The next step is you say they won't get it. They're not going to get that information, right? Here's my prediction. I could be wrong, but here's just a thought I had. Maybe it's a long shot. They'll say, okay, well, how about we have the archivist start checking to make sure those records exist? And then if they're going to, you know, and then the judge will be like, well, before they can be released, there has to be a challenge and there's an injunction. And then they leak. And then private communications start leaking out of context. All of a sudden, news stories emerge accusing people of very serious wrongdoing, and it's used to seed very, very bad press and shot content through the midterms and into the next presidential election.
Well, and how they'll do this also, and this is just how the Justice Department works when it's pursuing a lead, is they will say, all right, well, this is only official government correspondence, so any .gov, whitehouse.gov email address that mentions Jack by name, and then they'll read the email, and they'll say, Jack was at the Christmas party on Thursday, and they'll say, well, we need to know more about the Christmas party. And who else was at the Christmas party? Lydia was at that Christmas party. Well, now we need Lydia's records, because Lydia is now tied to Jack, and it will just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then all of a sudden, now you're turning over things that aren't whitehouse.gov. Now you are turning over private stuff, and it's like, look, you know, we went to the DA, and there's enough evidence here that we have to keep digging.
But a grand jury.
You keep digging, and eventually all of us are guilty of something. What's that book? Crime a Day? We're all guilty of four crimes a day if you dig.
They'll go to a grand jury, a non-adversarial court. They'll say, look at this. These people are implicated in January 6th for this reason. And the grand jury is going to be like, do it, indictment.
Yeah. Right, and they're going to go, and then they'll go to... even prior to that, but they'll go to Comcast, Verizon, etc., and they're going to say, "Hey, we're investigating this. It's very important. We need these records. We need to go through all this. So you know, turn it all over." And of course, they will. Like I'm under no aspersions that what they're trying to do here is remember George Papadopoulos. The fact that he's on this list as well, he was caught up in this. He got a date wrong. Right. He got a date wrong in the first one of these witch hunts during Russiagate. So he got the date wrong in Russiagate. And so he went to jail for a week because when he sat down and had that conversation, he couldn't remember when he met the guy who talked about Hillary's emails. And, you know, I remember, said it was this day, but it was actually a month before, a year later. Right. That's how they get you. That's what they're looking for is perjury traps.
That's why Trump refused to go in person and said he'd have his lawyer draft a letter
written only. Right. Yep. So my lawyers are preparing a number of methods to prevent any of this. But if they do try to subpoena me and ask me to go for any of my sources, that's the hard line. I will not give you anything in regards to that. In fact, I'm not going to comply with any of these requests. If I have any choice in the matter whatsoever, I'm not going to comply. I'm not going to have anything to do with this. I'm not going to listen to what you say. Look, I spent a year at Guantanamo Bay already. Send me back. I don't care. Send me to Gitmo. I've been there already once. I'll do it again.
You weren't there as a prisoner.
Yeah, you have to phrase that properly.
Right. Don't care. Not much difference. Honestly, not much difference between I've been on one side of the glass and I'll be on the other side of the glass. I don't care.
I want to, Lydia, pull up this this graphic.
Yeah.
This is an image that we've seen before on the show, and we debated whether or not it was true and correct, but it's the 10 stages of genocide. Now, the first thing is that this graphic we have is an oversimplification of the actual 10 stages of genocide that was initially written. I think it was written by a historian or academic talking about what we see through various authoritarian dictatorships. But let me just read some for you. They say the first stage is classification. People are divided into us and them. Stage two is symbolization. People are forced to identify themselves. Three, discrimination. People begin to face systematic discrimination. Four is dehumanization. People equated with animals, vermin, or diseases. Five is organization. The government creates specific groups, police and military, to enforce the policies. Six is polarization. The government broadcasts propaganda to turn the populace against the group. Seven is preparation. Official action to remove and relocate people. Eight is persecution. The beginning of murders, theft of property, trial massacres. Nine is extermination, wholesale elimination of the group. And 10 is denial. The government denies that it committed any crime. Now, I don't think that this is a linear path. You know, I think it's just several things you see in genocide or dictatorship. So I'll just very quickly say, well, the last time we talked about this, we got to number two. People are forced to identify themselves, and it's like, where are people being forced to identify themselves?
Yeah,
not Australia.
Political, gender, you know, pronouns
on COVID.
No, you're not being forced. You're not being forced.
On COVID, I think we're on step seven.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now the COVID passports is kind of like, identify yourself. Are you?
So let's
are
talk.
Are you the virus?
The conversation we're having before was about, you know, the. Obviously, you know, January 6th, they put out this list of a bunch of people, including Trump activists. But when you think about it in terms of the vaccine, this list is scary. Mm. I mean, for one, us and them, they keep going on TV saying that all of this is the fault of the people who aren't vaccinated. People are forced to identify themselves. Yes, they're mandating that you reveal your identification at buildings. Mm. People are facing systematic discrimination. Yeah, you can't go into buildings. People are equated with animals, vermin, or diseases. Horse medicine. They're talking about people who are taking ivermectin, not FDA approved for use in COVID, mind you, but they're equating it with animal. The government creates specific groups, police and military, to enforce the policies. Are we there yet? Is that happening? Is there a specific group that's been created for this?
Well, the Capitol Police has been expanded.
But that's more true, MAGA stuff. Yeah. That's not vaccine-related stuff. They say the government broadcasts propaganda. Well, I mean, Fauci won't shut up. And then official action to remove and relocate people. I'll tell you this. I don't think we're there yet in terms of the vaccine, but you have various aspects of this across the board.
We got to be careful we don't play into this either, because the first one, us and them, I've noticed when I have conversations here and in general, I talk about them like they are the Biden crew or whatever, the deep state, whatever they – I'm feeding this. Mm. And if I keep talking, lazily acting like that, they're going to keep acting like, see, I just did it again. They. Mm-hmm. There is no they. It's us. We are humans on Earth together.
Yeah, Ian, that's utopian thinking.
Well, but if we don't go that direction, we're going to start dividing people. So
that's like saying
someone who's thinking that those terms, they, you know, the, you know, and you hear this. If, by the way, what you just said is, if you tune into MSNBC or CNN right now and you listen to how they talk about these medical mandates, they always use terms of we and us. Mm. We need to do this.
We need
to do that. Right? It's always we. It's always
we
us.
We need to make things harder for them. They've right. said
and
that
it's
on
like,
TV.
Well, who is we?
And look
in
at the way
situation.
They talk about we.
Who are you?
What was the adjective we kept using in Alaska when they talked about the crowd who was at Obama's birthday party? How they described
sophisticated.
Themselves.
We're sophisticated.
We're a sophisticated vaccinated class. Mm-hmm. Right? That's why there was no concern about that party. It was a sophisticated. We are the enlightened ones. We're the smart ones. We are, you know, Bill Maher made this maybe it was about a year and a half ago on one of his monologues where he talked about Middle America, right? We have Wolfgang Puck. They have Chef Boyardee.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Right.
Yeah.
We have this. They have that. They're envious of us. So I appreciate what you're saying from the humanitarian perspective. I wish we were a we, But I fear that if I don't have a they versus us, they're going to kill me. Like, they talk about me, you know, what they're doing to you with this January 6th commission right now. They have complete desire to eradicate me from the political space, from the discourse space, from the what I do for a living. And so if I don't put up boundaries, they're coming after
me. And remember, what we've also seen that's going on, and this is something where that I'm going to get into if they want to pursue this with me, is they will set up operations, and we've seen this in the past, we've seen this even just last year, where the federal government and the FBI will use a system of informants and plants that will go into various groups, these sort of like edge case groups, Discord chats, Facebook groups, and then they will become accelerants. So they will accelerate what's going on. They will become accelerationists for that particular that specific unit, that specific group of people, whether it's a militia or something. And we are going to get onto all of that, Nancy Pelosi. I want to find Nancy Pelosi's personal communications that were members of these militias. I want to go after all the communications that her and her staff have had with Stuart Rhodes and the Oath
Keepers. I want to make a point to wrap up what Ian said. There's only one thing you need to understand so you know that this is just not correct. Go tell the Taliban what you just said. Go walk up to them outside of the airport in Kabul and say, we're all in this together. There's no us and them, and see how they treat you.
Well, sometimes it works.
No,
I've been in situations where I don't even speak the language, but as long as you vibe with them, you are one of them.
You're going to vibe with the Taliban?
I don't know. You could.
They're walking around with guns. They're beating people in the streets.
That's kind of a fantasy because I don't know them. I've never seen a person that identifies as Taliban. All I've seen is propaganda. Mm-hmm.
I've met Taliban.
I think going to what you're saying.
Their vibe is, how much of the Quran do you have memorized? Mm-hmm. Their vibe is, you know, do you perform zakat? Are you praying five times a day?
And you're an American. It doesn't matter.
Have you submitted to Islam?
Right.
Right.
Yes and no, but it doesn't matter. And if you're an American right now, then you're immediate, like,
Practice some Russian if you're over there.
Why did they beat that Australian guy? There was an Australian guy just walking to the airport, and they just started beating him. Why would they do that?
I don't know. But
it's just us, right?
I see partly what you're saying, because there are situations where it can become so volatile that if you insert yourself, you'll be destroyed without in a moment. But
what do you think is happening when they put together a list of people?
This is part of that, creating that volatility. If we can also create that volatility if we want. So it's like, you can acknowledge that it's there without propelling it.
Ignoring the problem won't make it stop.
No, I'm not saying to ignore it. I'm just saying don't feed it.
Put it this way. As a Catholic, I believe that, you know, that there is a heaven, and in that wonderful, you know, the new Eden, the new kingdom, that there, it will be us, and we will all be one, and we'll all be together. Mm-hmm. But, in this current moment, in this part of the movie that we're in right now, in what we're living through, what I am personally living through, when I look at my kids, when I put them to bed and think, is this the last time I'm going to see them because somebody's going to come knock on my door and take me away? With CNN getting tipped off because of my opinions, right? I don't really have that luxury right now. I do have my rosary, and I say that every day, but that's all I got.
You raised an interesting point, and I think this is where our system is rigged, and it is very messed up, in that you said, I'd love to see Nancy Pelosi's correspondence, but Congress is exempt. Right? Congress doesn't have to share their records. No one has the authority to ask for Nancy Pelosi's records. Now, she has the authority to ask for the president's records. I find that a huge flaw with our problem, right? FOIA does not exist in the legislative branch. You can't ask your senator, congressman.
I'll get them.
Well, if someone leaks them.
I'll get them.
But my point is that you don't have she has tools. She
doesn't know how far my network goes. I'm going to get
them. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that legally has tools.
I see what you're saying.
You don't.
Right.
We don't. And not everyone is Jack Posobiec.
But Daniel, these are better men.
That's not, well,
they're
exactly.
So sophisticated, though.
Yeah, they are sophisticated.
They're so sophisticated. They're so much better.
And that
than
is a huge problem with the way things are structured right now. And so you can subpoena you can impeach the president twice, but what authority does the president have to say, I would like to know how Nancy Pelosi is coordinating with X, Y, or Z to come after me and my administration?
Oh, I want
to
see your communications on the belt-fed, the crew-served machine.
Oh, yes. And another one, by the way, Chuck Schumer. Did you see what happened to your boy Andrew? Your boy Andrew Cuomo.
He's not really my boy.
You saw that, right?
Saying that because I'm from New York.
Chuck, you saw that, right?
By the way,
right? Yeah, I know some things, Andrew, or I know some things, Chuck. Don't go there. Don't go there.
They're going there.
Okay, Chuck.
You know what's funny is when you look over in Australia, we got they're building camps. You know what I saw? What's really funny? Check this out. Check this out.
You see, they have the QR codes as well on the doors.
Yeah, yeah, they're putting signs on people's doors. Suspected of having COVID. Now here's the best part.
So you have to swipe in. It's grocery stores. It's where you, when you go to work, if you're going, I don't know if churches are open. I think this is mainly the New South Wales. It's that one area where it's worse.
It's like Minority Report, man. You know what I saw today? I looked at this article from Nine News Australia they have an interactive map of all of the areas of New South Wales that are under lockdown. Surprise, surprise, it's all of them. And stay at home orders. You're only allowed to leave for very specific things. Chris Hemsworth went out surfing.
Hmm.
You know why? Because if you're rich, you're exempt.
So wow. Sophisticated.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's been people complaining about it, saying, how come the rich people are at the beach? And they said, shut your mouth, peasant.
Do you think anyone's going to arrest Chris Hemsworth? He's a national icon. He's a treasure. Mm-hmm. He's exempted, just like our politicians are exempt from all of our COVID
now,
rules.
I want to make sure this is clear. I think Chris Hemsworth's rad. I don't blame him for this.
Good actor.
The government is implementing, I'll put it this way. I don't think it's the fault of Chris Hemsworth that he's successful and able to go to the beach.
Nope.
I think what that really means is the government is purposefully punishing the poor. They are purposefully beating down poor people.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Did you see the churches that they were going after?
No.
You know, I saw this video, and it's amazing because I looked up the anchor's name because the guy had tweeted it out. It was like a local news thing in Australia, and the guy's name was actually Peter Overton. Right? So his name is actually Overton.
Wow.
Simulation,
right? And then they go and they interview somebody, and he said, and it's this like, you know, pasty white guy with a mask going, well, I just had to call the police on this church, and what they were doing was just so wrong, and it was terrible. He's like the vocal fry, you know. You look at the church, and these are like the majority of them appear to be immigrants to Australia, and they not well off. I mean, this is like folding chairs and like not well off church, but it was a place where people were going because they were looking for some semblance of connection to the eternal and to the infinite, something positive, a sense of community where they could get over. And because you should hear the way, I don't know if you have the clip of it, but the way they're talking about this church, they called them arrogant and they called them greedy and self-interested. And I'm like, These are Christians you're referring to this way. People who are not affluent, people who aren't on fancy news networks like Peter Overton.
You raised a great point of how, you know, it is punishing the poor. And when Obama had his birthday party a couple of weeks ago and people were saying, you know, hypocrisy, et cetera, I took a very different approach. And another thing that happened at the birthday party, John Kerry showed up in his private jet, right? And people said, shame on John Kerry, hypocrisy. And I said, if I had John Kerry's wealth and married a rich widow, that's the old-fashioned way you make your money, right? I would fly a private jet. And if I had Obama's wealth and prestige, I would have a party with 600 of my closest friends. The point is not that they did it. Everyone should have that right. The point is that the people telling us to go green and to lock down are never going to do it.
Right.
They are never going to follow the laws that they want the powerless, the voiceless, the nameless and faceless to have.
Well, keep
and
in mind,
that is the problem.
What they're
it's
doing
not
now,
the hypocrisy, it's that you don't have the power to thwart the laws that the rest of us are imposing on
what
you.
What the green movement has wanted for a generation, the same people are now getting through the threat of COVID.
Right? COVID envy is a real thing.
Right. So they wish that they could get right, you know, so now it's all the people who were, you know, like sort of like the grifter class, the ones that are just pushing this stuff. They, you know, they used to be climatologists. Now they're all epidemiologists. You know, they went to bed one night and woke up, and now they're getting the restrictions. They are getting the mandates. They're getting everything they wanted to take away people's liberties and people's freedoms through the threat of, it's almost cliche to say it at this point, but the Rahm Emanuel's famous quote, never let a crisis go to waste.
Yeah. And COVID is for your good, for the good of society. Therefore, you have to follow these prescriptions, and the environmentalists have wanted that forever. The COVID shut down people's ability to go to church, right? The Australia laws, which are that list that you mentioned, which came out today, was you read that and it reads like
Nazis.
Nazis.
They're Nazis, man.
It reads
and people of Australia. I mean, they're protesting.
They are,
but you have
and it's going to get
literal.
Bloody.
I, when I say literal, I'm saying
$1,000 fines if they catch you outside after curfew.
And at what point do the police, the Australian police, who I hope are listening to this podcast on horseback, say, I am not going to hit this person with my, but you see the video.
Well,
of
did
them
you see the
hitting
the truckers videos?
At what point did the Australian police say, I am not obeying this order?
I saw a couple of videos where it was truckers saying, you know, we run this country, and people realize, so you look on the map, Australia is pretty big, but it's, if you look at the actual, you know, I always do map breaks on Twitter. If you look at the actual populated areas, it's only around the coast, right? It's very sparsely populated. And so those truckers are absolutely necessary as much as they are everywhere else. But really in Australia, when they're shipping those goods, when they're shipping that food, and you see, you're starting now to hear these truckers, and they're saying, we will shut this country down over this if you keep pushing us over this.
But
stuff.
Will enough
we
of
will
them.
Stop. Will That's the question, isn't it?
You know, because we like to talk about the police and, you know, with the big movement to abolish the police. This is why I'm saying right now, I've been on the abolish the police train for a little bit, mostly talking to Michael Malice, and it has a lot to do with watching what happened with the lockdowns. How many cops, not all of them, you know, NYPD actually.
I think a lot of people on the right had a moment. They went through something watching those videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're going right back to back the blue. You know, there's a period where we saw people on the right throwing police the thin blue line flag on the ground and stomping on it because the cops were now turning on them. But you look at what's happening in Australia and who's enforcing it. It's all these metro cops, and they're macing little girls. It is some of the most insane
for their health.
Yeah, to protect them.
In the name
and
of their
the girls
health,
are
for their
screaming.
Own good. Yeah, for your own good.
They're busting down doors and taking people out of their homes. They're shutting down churches in New York City. They shut down churches. I'm telling you right now. You've got a slight opportunity, or you had it. It's probably gone. When the left kept saying defund and abolish, if every conservative said you got it, then you would avoid what's coming next.
Mm. I mean, the issue there is you have a psychological difference of viewpoint when it comes to it. So the right, one of the leading planks of the right is wanting an ordered society, right? So this idea of being conservative means that you want that traditional ordered society. And so rule of law and the enforcement mechanism, the forcing function for rule of law would be a lawful and dignified police service.
Well,
right?
Of course.
And that's the idea versus...
But is that what's happening?
And that's not what's happening.
Right.
But what I'm saying is you to get a conservative to kind of go wholeheartedly and join hands with like a BLM member on that, it would take a lot of conversation and a lot of looking at issues like what you're talking about, by the way, and getting them to actually sit down and say, wait a minute, perhaps there were, and I actually had Nico House, who's a BLM guy, he's like a man of the left, but he's someone that I've become friends with and someone that I talk to. And one thing that he always says is, Jack, I'm not against the rule of law. What I'm against is corruption, right? And aren't you against corruption? I said, well, yeah, of course I'm against corruption. Well, then maybe we're not as in disagreement as it seems.
Yeah, the enforcement mechanism I don't think is the problem. I think the problem is these leaders who have newfound powers that no one is stopping.
Absolutely not.
I agree with you that the police should not be enforcing bad laws.
Plus, by the way, like then when you demonize the police, when you demonize them, good cops leave and scrubs come through.
Step one is the mayor saying, I am ordering all churches to shut.
And so
it takes courage for people to say, I'm just not listening to that. Now, step two is the cops are playing their role. I agree with you. But step one is when the mayor says, as of today, no church is allowed to be open.
Do you know,
you need priests and ministers and parishioners to say,
it's not
I'm just going to say,
no, this
screw
is an
that.
Excuse.
I don't think it's an excuse, though.
This is an excuse that we hear all the time. Right now, there's a mandate in New York City. If you are disabled, sick, or unable to get the vaccine, or for a religious reason, it is not the police stopping you. It is the mom and pop restaurants and bakeries saying, F you, get out of my store. I don't care. I was told to do it, so I will. If all of these people in New York said, I will not abide by illegal activities because discriminating at someone on the basis of a disability is a violation of New York City, state, and federal health and non-discrimination laws. They'll do it anyway because they don't care. They're feckless, spineless, pathetic losers. They all do it. And each and every one of these police officers has a choice. They can be a villain. When you want to be a henchman to the villain, by all means, that's your choice. No one forces these people to be henchmen. But if the cops want to come out and say, yeah, I don't care if it's unconstitutional. I don't care if it violates my oath to the Constitution. I'm going to beat that old lady so she can't go to church. It's not Cuomo who did it. It's that individual police officer.
I agree with you.
And they're doing it to restaurants. They're doing it to salons. They're letting prisoners go and locking up small business owners.
This is anarcho-tyranny.
Exactly. And you see what's happening in Australia. We are a few months behind where they've been. Now, we have a constitution which does provide us some shielding on this. But if police officers have already been willing to arrest and fine and block people from going to church, it's the First Amendment.
So it is the
they
role of
don't care.
It is the role of individuals, individual police officers and individual ministers, priests, parish priests and individuals, restaurant owners and bar owners. It is the role of the individual to say, I am not following this. When you say abolish the police, we are talking about institutions. And I would argue that the institution is not the thing at flaw right now. So I disagree with the abolish the police movement because we are talking about institutional flaws. You're absolutely right. If there is a cop who is told by the sergeant, hey, you got to go to arrest that person because they're trying to get into the bar.
And they do it every time.
Well then, and that's a huge problem. Absolutely. Yep. And then enough cops are eventually going to say, I'm not doing it. But teachers are already quitting their jobs
saying, I'm not
following that.
As Jack just mentioned.
So it's an individual problem.
The cops who won't do it quit. And we've seen that. And I've gotten email after email.
And it's
And now what do we see? Hold on. What do we see in Seattle? We saw the cops apologizing to Antifa as they arrested the victim of Antifa violence.
Crazy.
I can sum all this up for anyone who you hasn't, you've gotten there yet. Get out of cities. Just get out of cities. Just don't be there. Hmm. Right. I was joking with Michael Knowles that he had that, you know, reasons to vote for Democrats book and it's all blank on the inside. Mm-hmm. And that I was like, I should take a page out of your book and do a get out of cities book and then just have one page, get out of cities. The next page, just don't be there. Get out of cities. Just don't be there. And then, you know, 300 pages of that, which, you know, if you
survival
do,
guide for the yeah, 2021
survival guide. Don't be there. And I have people say, what exactly do you mean by that, Jack? And they want to drill down and you know, kind of get into it. I said, get out of cities.
But we do have institutional problems.
These institutions are broken.
We used to have great institutions.
They're absolutely broken.
Where is the ACLU?
Right.
Where is that was an institution. Where is, I would argue as well, where is the Catholic Church to say, sorry, we're not closing our doors?
I think the problem is
there are institutional failures.
We're in a pandemic. Whatever you think about the COVID, whatever, but we're in officially a pandemic, I think. So we're acting like habeas corpus is suspended, like Spanish flu time, like martial law. Like we're basically under martial law right now. I don't think they've officially declared it, but that's how it.
And we've suspended habeas corpus before in this country. And it didn't go very well.
Like Lincoln did it now, during
and people
Civil
would say,
War.
Well, we won, right? But
well, dissidents were locked up in World War One too.
Listen, when you have
Eugene Debs,
small business
we
owners
locked up Japanese in World War II.
World War Two. Yeah.
When you have small business owners being arrested while prisoners are being freed, and far leftists went around causing billions in damages in big and small cities across this country, it's not a suspension of habeas corpus. It's a narco tyranny, and the police are more than happy. I will tell you this. We already see the stories of the sheriff in Minnesota who arrested that woman because she had a cafe and she refused to shut down. If you purchase a weapon, as is your Second Amendment right, to protect yourself as riots are going on, I guarantee you these police will go to your house and they will arrest you.
You mean like Kyle Rittenhouse?
Absolutely. Hmm. If you are concerned that a 70-year-old man was bashed over the head with a rock and left bleeding on the ground, which happened in Kenosha, and you say, I'm scared for my community, and then someone comes to you and says, how would you, you're a young man working at the YMCA, how would you like to help protect our business? As you say, okay. And then when a man chases you trying to steal your gun, you flee. And then when someone else fires a gun at you from behind, you turn. And when that man reaches for your gun, you fire in defense. They will lock you up. Hmm. They will go to your house in Wisconsin, Black Lives Matter. And when you brandish a firearm to show that you're acting in defense of your home, the police will go into your house and arrest you. And Black Lives Matter will celebrate it. Mm-hmm. They did. When Black Lives Matter went to a house in Milwaukee and set fire to it because they thought two girls were kidnapped there and they weren't. This is why a guy in his house sees the same group, and it was the same group, same activists, and thinks, I better, you know, let them know I'm armed. Now, he shouldn't have pointed the weapon at them, that I can say. But Black Lives Matter, they were the ones who were complaining about the cops. But when the cops showed up, they celebrated it. Mm-hmm. And the cops didn't stop the rioters. What did I say a year before this? Yeah. When we were still living in Philadelphia, and we were looking at the riots, I said, I tell you this. There will come a time when the rioters, when the mob, when the cultists, the fascists, whatever, come to your house and are protesting. And the police will show up because of a disturbance in the neighborhood. And they'll look at each other and say, what's easier, arresting the guy in the house or dealing with a riot? Just arrest the guy in the house. And they've done it.
Keeping the peace.
Yeah, keeping the peace. They don't care about your rights. So I look at right now when we see a lot of these cops quitting after the defund the police stuff. I tell you this, man, the videos we see now, like the one in Seattle, Antifa is chasing a guy. He's backing up and he's saying, get away from me. And the cops come and arrest him and then say, I'm so sorry, man. Would you mind? And to Antifa.
I think extremists. I think, though, to only blame cops and to single out cops solely, right, is maybe a little bit, you know, limiting in terms of how you're looking at it, right? We are looking at, in our cities, a symptom of a broader societal collapse of moral values, of national institutions.
Well, I'm not
of
just
national identity.
Cops.
No, and I don't think you are, but I think there are a lot of people who do that. And I think that a lot of what we're seeing now is the collapse of this very, and a lot of this started in the 60s. You can argue it went back further, but when it really comes down to it, if we do not have a national shared vision of what our morals are, what our national identity is, what does it mean to be American, when we are starting to destabilize these societies, like these groups, like Antifa, I just wrote a whole book about Antifa, but, and I pointed out their role is not, like, they have their stated role, but then they have their actual in practice role. They destabilize systems, right? We saw this in Weimar Germany, where that was the original institution of Antifa, right? They were a red front group. The idea was destabilize the country, and then somebody sweeps in, and then someone takes power.
Yep. But who are the ones attacking the shared vision of what makes the country? Who are the ones attacking the shared values? And that's why, again, going back to your point, and I truly mean this.
This is the long march to the institutions.
I like the fact that you want to be a we. I want to be a we.
Wouldn't that be great?
But when I look at our we institutions, you take something as simple as, this is a minute and a half of your time that we're going to say the darn national anthem, and you sing it, and you're going to be quiet. And for this minute and a half, whether you like it, don't like it, you think it's stupid, this minute and a half is not your minute. It's the national anthem's minute, and we're all going to shut the hell up. Just like at your wedding, when you were doing your vows, if I stood up and was like, you know, I want to make a comment right now, people will be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is Jack and Tanya's wedding.
This is why we didn't invite Daniel, by the way. You need to shut up.
Exactly. Not your time. The national anthem is not your... This belongs to the country. Shut the hell up. You know, I want to protest. You got the whole world to protest. But this belongs to the shared values of the country. But you can't have it.
What do you do
now? Now it's destroyed. This flag, you can't have it. This image, can't have it. There are no more shared images because we are told up for grabs.
Let me throw this out
there
as well.
They're all up for grabs.
To kind of put a pin on that is what you were saying earlier, Ian, what do you think would happen if you went to Afghanistan right now and tried to set a Taliban flag on fire?
You'd probably get gunned down.
What do you think would happen if you went out there and you saw, you know, a Taliban Shura Council meeting, and you walked up and started protesting?
What do you think would happen if, when after the Taliban took over, you took the Afghan national flag and started carrying it to the streets? That did happen.
That already
happened. People were brutally beaten.
Exactly.
What happens when you knock down a pride flag? The hate police in New York, I think it's in Queens, are the hate police is out because it's on camera. Someone knocked down a pride flag.
We have two.
You're not allowed to do that.
We have sporting events doing two national anthems now.
Mm. Why not three?
I'm not into the symbolism thing. Like, if Xi Jinping commanded us to sing the national anthem, it wouldn't be like
he will.
American pride.
Oh, he
it would
will.
Be
like,
not the American
don't
one.
Step on my freedom.
Oh, like, it'll be.
If Xi Jinping makes me say I love America, it doesn't mean I really love America.
No one's asking you to say you love America. They are asking for this one particular moment. This thing does not belong to you. And it is humbling for all of us and the collective values of this country to say, you know what, that's not mine. Just like those vows, that moment, your speech, you know what, it's Ian's birthday, ding, 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 and Ian wants that. No, I'm going to stop.
Well, and
this is one moment in time that does not belong to any individual.
But
no individual can usurp it.
Ian, there's got to be something that unites a community that when it comes to conflict, they say, we may disagree on X, Y, and Z, but because of the overarching umbrella, we are here for each other. America used to be, they would talk about diversity, the great melting pot. But American culture and values always superseded. So when people talk about multiculturalism, there's two definitions. The left definition, well, I should say the original view of multiculturalism was, you can come and have Chinatown, you can have Ukrainian village, Little Italy, Little Russia, whatever, but you followed the rules and the overarching culture of America. And you know what? People liked that. That's why they wanted to be here. but maybe they spoke Ukrainian and wanted to live by their relatives, but they still were free speech, they still were Second Amendment, they still wanted to live in this great country. What started happening now is that multiculturalism has come to mean something different, that there are pockets that exist outside of Americans' values and cultures. When those start growing, a completely separate moral framework, there is nothing uniting two groups. You end up with two national anthems within the same space. And I'll tell you this, two objects cannot occupy the same space. So when you have people who are under an umbrella all saying, okay, you know, I like skateboarding, you like BMX, and he likes snowboarding, but we're all Americans, we believe in free speech, and we like watching, you know, Michael Jackson music videos or something, that unites us. We don't have that anymore. Now you have people who say all of your movies are racist and bad, and you're not allowed to like them anymore. We're going to sing a different national anthem. Okay, you have a completely different worldview, a completely different moral framework, and these things struggle to coexist with each other. That's the thing about the national anthem. I don't think it's necessarily that we like force people to undergo it, but it's more a sign that when we come to a point where we cannot agree, the national anthem is something that we'll listen to and like and we're proud of, that half the people are like, play a different one. Now in one arena, people are fighting a symbolic or ideological war. When they say they're going to do two national anthems.
Well, it's also, you know, I mean, you think of it, right? Any sporting event is already two teams and two groups of fans that are there in opposition, right? They're there to, I want to defeat you, you want to defeat me. Look, I'm from Philadelphia, so, you know, whenever we were playing, you know, where the Giants were in town, you know, it got pretty rough. Yeah. Like we literally had
I almost was attacked at a sports game.
Yeah, we literally
in
had
Baltimore screaming for the Browns.
Philly, yeah, exactly.
But Philly fans are the most awful people. Philly Eagles fans, no offense to Philadelphia, but they
we're actually quite proud of them. We're actually quite proud of them. Yeah. Yeah, no, we had an actual trial court that would sit at the stadium. Right? Because there were so many fights that broke out that they didn't even want to have to bring somebody uptown. They brought the judge to the stadium. They called it Eagles Court.
That's awesome.
Right? And I've seen some stuff. But anyway, but to my point, right? Even in the city of Philadelphia, for that moment, when you've got two sides that want to go after each other, for that moment, you put that crap aside and you say, you know what? We're all Americans.
Those two guys who would fight at that game in Philadelphia.
They beat each other later.
They'll fight each other. But if you went up and said something like, if you went to guy A and said, do you like America? He'd be like, of course. Guy B, do you like America? Of course. We're fighting over him spilling my beer.
Right, exactly.
Now you go into these, I don't know how much the fans actually care about this stuff, but now you'll actually have, with the Olympics, for instance, in the soccer and the kneeling and everything, you'll have some people being like, America is evil and racist. Mm. The other person would be like, I like America. I think it was
Daily Caller or Campus Reform. They went to Georgetown and they were asking about this. They were asking about the Olympic team and they went around interviewing students, like Mail and Street interviews, and they couldn't find. Now, of course, you know, there's editing and selection bias, etc. But they went through student after student and every single one was getting up there saying, I just don't know how I can root for this team. Yeah, I can root for individual, you know, I can root for Simone Biles. I can root for, you know, various different athletes that are in this. But for the United States, no, I couldn't. And if you notice, that's how they marketed the Olympic team this year.
And what annoys me about that is that then those athletes, though.
Megan Rapinoe.
They flew over on American tax dollars,
yes.
Right? Like their team was funded by the taxpayers. So they will take all of the good that comes with it. But then for just that, you don't have to say, Megan Rapinoe, you love America. But for that one moment, as a courtesy to all of us who pay our damn taxes and allow this to happen for you, shut your damn pie hole. And she couldn't do that because that moment is not our moment. It's still my moment. Imagine when Megan Rapinoe kicked the goal. All the fans were like, you know what? You don't get to celebrate. We're going to do this. And she'd be like, wait a second. This is my moment. Mm-hmm. Right? Imagine if you scored a touchdown and the fans were like, you don't get to celebrate that. We all need to take a knee and protest what's happening in Bangladesh. The wide receiver would be like, what the hell? I just scored a touchdown. This is my moment. No, it's not. Megan Rapinoe, if you want to show your true protest moment, every time you scored a goal, you should have taken a knee there.
But when
she scored a goal, she wanted
about her.
Friggin' applause.
That's about her.
She wanted to be congratulated.
Tamira Mensah Stock. Let me say one name. Tamira Mensah Stock.
Amazing.
Who's that?
Why has she been disappeared from the entire narrative, the entire conversation? Right? I say the name, people are like, Tamira Mensah Stock.
I don't know who Tamira Mensah Stock is.
Why isn't that name on everybody's right? Front of mind. Why isn't that front of mind? Why isn't
she defied the narrative?
Because she defied the narrative, and it was some guy on Twitter who went and found her speech afterwards. Well, and she was the wrestler. She was the wrestler, and she won the gold, and they went to her, and she had the flag draped over her shoulders. And when they asked her, they said, how do you feel about that flag? And she said, I love the United States of America. I love living there. I love representing this country. It's the most happiest moment of my entire life just to be here. And you could see the patriotism. They wrote her out of it completely.
Was it Forrest who said that – it might have been Forrest. Maybe it was you – that we're actually in this country having a debate as to whether this country should even exist?
Mm. As far as, last week, yeah.
That's literally where we are right now as a country.
Right. And so – and just to like kind of – encapsulate all of this that we're talking about from January 6th to the decline of nationalism and patriotism. This is all for show, by the way, right? What's going on an economic level in this country is far beyond anything that we've seen before. The divergence of when you talk about class, when you talk about a new aristocracy, all of that's going on behind the scenes. And yet they throw all these things at you in the foreground to make you forget about it. But when you go back and you actually look at things that have happened in just the past 10 years, or, you know, we're talking about the fall of Kabul, the end of Afghanistan, right? You know, if you could start with 9/11 and then just go through everything that's happened in the past 20 years, and then, you know, you combine that with the rest of the 20th century, right? And I know you guys were talking about that last night, that you really realize there's been a whole lot that's going on that actually matters, that we are being distracted about, that we are being told, you know, oh, they want you fighting, you know, amongst yourselves over the different national anthems because they know what they're doing behind the scenes. They are robbing you blind. Mm. They are putting you into perpetual poverty. They are putting you to, they want you to be perpetual consumers and serfs and everything else.
And that's why
where it comes.
The abandoning thousands of Americans in Kabul is unsurprising. As tragic as it is, it's totally unsurprising because American government has abandoned its people for, like you said, 20 years.
They look at them as deplorable.
We abandoned people in Toledo and we sent all of their jobs to China and Mexico. And we give them fentanyl, by the way. We've abandoned people in rural America.
Western Maryland.
We talk about the divides of the rich and the poor and the haves and the have-nots. And who's making that? Capitalism? No, it's government policy, right? We've abandoned people to live in the inner cities. And look at what we've done with them. We've given them the worst, literally the worst education in the developed world.
And
you want to talk about maybe a rough or a corrupt police force. We've given them that. We've given them crime and we've given them no education and opportunity to escape. In rural America, we've given them as lousy schools with no jobs and no opportunities and tons of fentanyl. You know, if fentanyl crossed the border and it was killing rich white liberal girls in Manhattan, it would have been stopped like that.
But it's
killing poor rednecks and no one gives a damn about
them. But
not just
rednecks.
So we're abandoning.
You showed me. In Alaska.
So my point is, we abandoned people in Afghanistan. American government has abandoned the people for years now.
So let's talk about this. You guys went to Alaska. It was like an energy project, right? You know, so
Alaska. Yeah.
I want to preface real quick, just to prime this. We went from being energy independent to dependent
in the blink of an eye.
In the blink of an eye, and there's a lot that contributes to it. But then you get, you know, Joe Biden's releasing the sanctions on Nord Stream 2. You get there's other pipelines they're trying to do from Central Asia and the Middle East up into Europe. They, you know, the Biden administration shuts down Keystone. They ban fracking on federal lands. Then the press has the gall to come out and say Biden is not causing high gas prices. I just want to make sure there's a few things that are clear before we get into this. When you shut down the Keystone pipeline and ban some fracking, speculators say, wow, supply is going to be strained. It's a good time to buy because in a few years it's going to be worth way more. That instantly drives up prices. That hits you when you buy a gallon of gas. So you weren't necessarily doing an energy project or you know, you were going.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. It was that, but also more than just that. And so when we look at these discussions like Afghanistan, the Middle East, rare earth minerals, these elements that China is gobbling up around the world, One Belt, One Road, the petrodollar, so, you know, which obviously Bitcoin is a huge hedge against, right? All of these various discussions that go on, then we never seem to turn around and actually have the discussion of, well, why does all of that stuff matter so much? Why are we so beholden to all of these various things? Is this really the best way to run our country? what if, you know, and I say this on Twitter, and I've been saying it more since I got back from Alaska, is what, you know, I don't want to go straight full Fortress America, right? You know, I want to have commerce, obviously, want to have trade. But at the same time, is, are we running our country in a way that's most beneficial for the American people who live here now, today? And are we developing our own resources for the benefit of our people versus putting ourselves at the mercy of these cartels like OPEC, which is a cartel, literally, the actual Mexican cartels, et cetera, and all of these other various things, because we've gotten ourselves head over heels for these international agreements rather than just looking internally, seeing what we have here and helping the people of this country.
What if we spent $2 trillion and deployed our military to Alaska to nation build in Alaska? Oh. The resources, the potential energy.
I know.
What if we did that?
You would at least have a tenfold return on your investment.
You'd have a city?
Yeah.
You'd have a city of Americans?
We've been mining copper as a human race for about 5,000 years. This was a great statistic that we learned at this potential copper mine. We've been mining copper for about 5,000 years as a human race.
Copper is the big thing they're talking about in Afghanistan now, too.
Yeah. Wow. Tons of copper.
And lithium.
Wow. Right?
Copper and lithium, right.
The amount of copper we have mined over the past 5,000 years, we will need twice that if we are going to all drive electric vehicles by the year 2030.
Wow.
Assuming that we use copper wiring.
Graphene.
Part of graphene is that it upends the copper
industry. And if it works as a technology, fascinating. But right now we use copper.
Yeah.
Right?
And so
we need copper. Your hybrid vehicle, your Prius.
And it's going to come from somewhere.
Has about 80 pounds of copper. And now we have a mandate. And that's just the Prius, right? The bigger ones, the buses have up to 300 pounds of copper.
That's for the electric motors, right?
That's all part of the battery.
That's the battery, the coil.
We're going to need a lot of copper. Where are we going to get the copper from? That's just a legit question, right? We're going to need an awful lot of lithium. We're going to need cobalt, cadmium, nickel, gold, graphite.
China understands all of this, by the way, very well.
There's one state that has all of these things, but it's our playground. And rich white, and I won't even say liberals, because it's a lot of conservatives who look at Alaska as like, oh, it's so pretty, we shouldn't do anything there. And the reason why we wanted to do this trip is because when you meet Alaskans who say, I would really like a job, because there's nothing going on here, but if we open up this mine, I could maybe do something, right? And we'll do the mine responsibly because we are Americans.
So wait, let me tell a story about how you actually get us to the mine, right? This is like the, you know, we wake up and we're in Anchorage and he said, Jack, we're going to go see the, you know, and it's not a mine now. It's the deposit because it's been tested, but right now there are no, you know, there's no holes, nothing being dug.
There isn't
even a shovel in the ground there right now.
Been waiting 17
right?
years.
And so we're going to check it out. Sure, whatever, Daniel, whatever you want to do. Right. So I got my coffee and then we drive out to, Alaska is big, right? You know, and that's, I don't mean that as an understatement. Alaska is massive.
Size of Texas? Bigger?
I think it's
more
like 3.5 tech size.
It's massive. Absolutely massive.
Texas is texy.
Anyone in the lower 38 who's never been there cannot appreciate the scale of Alaska. We just have nothing else like it.
On the map, it gets squished, right? The northern hemisphere.
I pulled up an overlay image.
Oh, yeah.
And it stretches from central Michigan to central Minnesota. The Aleutians go, if you are in Alaska, in the easternmost point, you are in Florida, and the westernmost point, you are in Sacramento.
Yeah. Right.
Whoa!
Yes.
Yeah.
That is big.
It stretches from coast to coast.
To be fair, that's the Aleutian Islands.
If you include the Aleutians.
So if we want to say just the main landmass, I think it would be fair to say Florida to
Nevada?
New Mexico.
Jeez!
Yeah.
Wow.
So we get in an airplane from Anchorage. We fly about an hour, right? Yeah. And then we fly about an hour, so we're going across two bays to get to this tiny little remote middle of nowhere
village
that's just sitting there. It's a native village. And he says, all right, we're going to hang out here for a little bit and then we're going to get a helicopter. I said, what do you mean? We're not here already. Right. And we'll talk about the village in a minute, but he said, no, we're going to get a helicopter. So I'm like, okay, fine. So we get on the helicopter and then the helicopter is another 40 minutes or so. So now you're in the helicopter, you're going 40 minutes and you're just out and there's no roads, right? So aviation is actually huge in Alaska because it's so big. I think they have like one of the highest per capita of private aviation pilots licenses and everything. Because you have to. You just, if you want to get from point A to point B, the roads are, you know, they're not great or they're not, they don't exist in many cases. And so you've got, so we're in the helicopter, a New Zealand pilot, actually, Kiwi. And,
told to look out for bears.
You're told to look out for bears.
Look out for bears because they attack.
You know,
I was petrified.
We get up there. You were. You totally were.
I've done this so many times that I'm afraid of bears.
And were you armed? It took us no, we weren't armed. But we did have a helicopter though. so we get all the way out there. And we're flying, and it's, and I'm waiting for like these, you see all those, like those, it feels like every other reality show is like set in Alaska, right? So I'm looking for the rivers and the streams, and we flew over some like at one point, but then for most of it, it's just barren.
Yep.
It's just barren, desolate, cause it's tundra, you know, a lot of this is just tundra. So it's frosted over rocks, a little bit of grass, no trees,
no
anything.
Trees. And then
not one
like
tree.
A straight field.
I'll show you a picture.
Just, yeah.
It literally, you just sit, no trees
just
whatsoever.
Just field and little tiny brush. And,
you think
and,
we could seed bomb pine trees up there?
And so we get there, and we land, and I'm like, all right, Dan, you made me wake up at 6 in the morning to get all the way out here, and it's for this.
One second.
I got to see this.
I can't see it. Yeah.
It's the same thing as what I was imagining.
It's
barren
it's
wasteland.
It's just barren wasteland.
It's just nothing.
I mean, not wasteland.
Literally.
Barren land.
Just nothing. Right? And I'm like, what is this? And Daniel looks at me and he says, Jack, underneath your feet right now is over $1 trillion in copper.
What?
And in 6 months, that'll be 1.3 trillion.
Yeah.
exactly. And I'm like, and I'm looking at him like, did we bring shovels?
Yeah.
Like, let's get the copper, Daniel. What are you doing? You know? And he's like, we're not allowed. Like, who says? Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it blows your mind that you're just out in, and by the way, that's only one valley, right? Mm-hmm. You could go to the next valley and the next one over, and there could be, that's all we know about, right?
I understand, you know, environmentalism for sure.
Sure.
But we're not talking about taking
this is not a national park.
Fifth of Alaska and blowing it up. We're talking about, probably what is it, square mile or what is even in that? Is it even that?
Oh, it's probably a square mile. That's probably inaccurate.
Just a square mile
in Alaska,
I'm sorry. I would.
It is not a postage stamp on a football field.
What if we just took that $2 trillion over 20 years instead of Afghanistan and said, "Hey, I got an idea. Let's nation build in our nation." And I mean, not even Alaska. We got Wyoming and Montana.
The reason why we're doing it is not environmental reasons. That's the facade is environmental reasons, environmental concerns. The reason why, which is why I started this organization and got into the business, because the people who own copper rights in other countries, fund groups like the Sierra Club and the National Resources Defense Council and Earth First and Environmental Defense Fund, they fund these groups to say we have to protect the earth. Because they own the mineral rights in Chile, Afghanistan. The Taliban is going to now sell them all to China.
Right?
They own other countries.
This is the big thing with the Afghan.
That
with
the whole Taliban purpose of the energy
and China. So China going in, all those photos you're seeing around of China meeting with the Taliban leaders. Right? This is all about the copper and the lithium deposits in Afghanistan.
And I'm sorry, the 17-year-old like kids like with the tambourines and the hacky sack who is saying we got to protect the earth, you are a puppet.
So you've never been there.
You are a puppet of a huge conglomerate that does not want $1.3 trillion worth of copper on the market because it will affect commodities prices. And so they want to keep it in places that have no OSHA, have no... Imagine a copper mine mine in Indonesia.
I would encourage you to look up Copper Mine Chile. Waste. Copper Chile waste. Giant strip mines. Massive pools of like this colored liquid that's apparently super toxic.
So
I mean,
you don't think
the
EPA in Chile is there making sure that...
So you're saying there's no like, there's less... regulations.
That's the reason why we like to mine in other countries because you can use 8-year-old girls, right?
Let's talk about where that cobalt's coming
from.
In
the Congo, right? The largest cobalt producer, the mines are owned by China, but they're in the Congo. 30,000 children slaves work there right now. I'm guilty. I have cobalt in my iPhone as we talk.
So you admit it.
Absolutely.
It turned out,
you know, but we just pretend that it's not happening. Now we could mine cobalt in other countries, but it would be expensive. Oh, no. So let's just use the slave children in the Congo, because no one cares about the slave children in the Congo. So when we want to open up a lithium mine in Alaska, or a cobalt mine, or a gold mine, or a copper mine, rather than hurt prices, we hire a bunch of hippie kids to say, protect the earth. And we start a group called Moms Against Asthma. And we fund all of these different people. And they go and they bang and they cry and they talk about raping the earth. And it is all just one.
But
it is all a huge
another piece,
lie.
There's another piece to this, though. So it's after we get back from there. And I'm just, and you have that idea, right? And plus, if you actually look at the history of Alaska, so Alaska was a territory for a very, very, very long time, since like post-Civil War, almost 100 years, like post-Civil War on out. And people didn't want to make it a state originally because they were concerned that it wouldn't be self-sustaining, because they were thinking, hey, this whole area is just a wasteland. Why should we give them statehood? We're going to have to completely carry them. They're going to pay their way on the way. This is before, but then oil is discovered up there. And so in the 1950s, I think it's 59.
They started the pipeline.
They get the statehood.
Yep.
So they get state and they say, well, wait a minute. Okay, now you have the ability to sustain yourselves. There is a reason we are going to give you statehood, because then that will give us access to the resources down here that we need in the lower 48. So the whole idea of Alaska was that you will be given statehood and that we will then be able to develop these resources for the betterment of the American people throughout the country, right? These will be our goods. This will be we'll put actual Americans to work. We don't have to worry about this, all these trade issues and, you know, the kids in the Congo, et cetera. We can do it all right here. And we can set it to our standards and we do it just the way we want. Then, so afterwards, I'm sitting there thinking, and it is, you kind of get that like gold bug a little bit when you're sitting there. I still have it a little bit where I'm like, there's $1 trillion in copper. I just want to go, can I just get like a nugget, like a little bit, you know, my wife, she could use some copper jewelry maybe, right? You know, and, she didn't come with us to the wasteland. And, but then he took us to the village, and I got to tell you that, of everything that we did, and we also went up to Prudhoe, we did some of the touristy stuff while we were up in Alaska, but this village that we went to, the native village, I can't get some of the images out of my head, and I can't get some of the stuff that, so we met with the leaders of the village, and I can't get some of the stuff that they told me out of my head. The amount of poverty that they live under, 60% unemployment in these towns, right? And the towns are all, and they're dying because there's no job. It's so remote. So people understand it's so remote. They have one little building where they have that, you know, that's the school. They don't have, and you want to talk about infrastructure, right? You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there wasn't even a doctor there.
No.
Like a doctor. Wow. Like not even, I'm not saying there wasn't a doctor's office. There wasn't even a doctor.
A couple people had cell phones, but there's no internet.
Yeah, wow. There was like a physician's assistant, yeah. I think was the closest they came. And then if you wanted to see a doctor, you better be able to afford a plane ticket, right? There's no bridge across the main lake to get you anywhere.
Yeah, and the flight to Anchorage was about $500 a person. So if you need to go to get your braces, well, you got to, on top of that, you need to pay the $500 flight to Anchorage.
How long of a flight is it to Anchorage?
About an hour. Yeah. And it reminded me of just some places I've seen in Southeast Asia.
Damn.
Right? So you think places that I've been to. But this is America. This is the United States of America. These are American citizens.
The government is kind of like, oh, I asked you this before the show, you guys, that they forgive, like, they basically are ignoring these people because they're the descendants of natives?
I don't think that's why, but that is also what's happening because now what's different though is, and Daniel, you know this better than me, they don't have the same type of, I guess I could say, agreements that were made between the U.S. government and the natives that you would see, that you're more used to seeing in, not that natives are treated well, throughout, you know, U.S. history, but I'm just saying that it's a different situation that you would see, like reservations, et cetera, throughout, the West in the U.S., in the lower 48, the contiguous U.S. In Alaska, they don't have that.
This is because Alaska was formed as a state after all these reservations were formed.
It was all
right.
So what's the difference? Like, how are they abused in some sort of specific way? I mean,
it's
poverty.
It's all economics, and, you know, God help you if you need police and if there's some emergency that goes on. There's no cops. Right?
I think if you are an Alaskan native and you are on your ancestral land, there's not going to be Amazon Fulfillment Center, right? No one's going to move a factory there. So what do you do if you want to stay on your land? What opportunities do you have? Well, natural resources seem to be the most obvious. But we've banned timber, right? The governor told us, when we had dinner with the governor, he said Rhode Island has a bigger timber industry than Alaska does.
Wow.
Right? Because why? Because
right, Alaska. Right,
Alaska.
The largest state and the smallest state.
Alaska.
Why is that? Is it because temperature?
It's because it's our little private park. And so here's, people pass a lot of rules.
Here's,
so
a line that, here's a line that somebody said, and that we met up there, and they were like, sort of a lot of, there's a lot of transplants to Alaska, you know, from the lower 40 people go up there, and I can't wait to get back, honestly. This, I go to, look, I travel a lot for my work. I've been to, I think, 43, 44 states plus Guam. And I loved Alaska. I absolutely loved it. I can't wait to go back. I get it. I totally get it. Just, you know, there for a weekend, I get it. But so we met somebody who had previously been a DC staffer. And one thing she was saying was, what a lot of people think of Alaska is, this is this giant, beautiful national park that I might like to visit someday. And so I'm going to oppose every single effort to do anything that might disrupt my potential dream of being there someday, because I have no idea what I'm talking about. But every time I've watched a documentary or a reality TV show, they always show these, and there are some beautiful parts of Alaska that I do agree should be preserved, right? And we're not talking about those areas. We're not talking about those national parks. We are talking about these wastelands.
Deserts.
And essentially deserts, right, right. It's tundra is a type of desert. Arctic deserts that have resources that are incredibly valuable to our people, number one, to our development, to our progress, and add additional benefit, we don't have to deal with China.
We don't have to deal
with the Taliban. We don't have to care about any of this stuff anymore because it's right there.
And we can do it with environmental stewardship. We can do it with respect for the earth and native communities. And we get the taxes and we get the jobs. I mean, the fact that the president was on the one hand closing down ANWR leases and then saying we want OPEC to produce more oil. You say, well, wait a second. Why? You're acknowledging that global climate change is a myth. Because if OPEC is producing more oil, then that's global climate change. So right off the bat, your arguments about climate change, you've dismissed them by this statement. But if OPEC can produce the oil, why can't America produce the oil? Why can't we get the jobs? Why can't we get the tax revenue?
Beyond that, real quick, I mean, there are many – we have hyper-centralized in many cities in the United States. Why aren't we – investing in some of these dying towns
before we get off of
or new places like Alaska.
You got to talk about the general store.
Oh, and just the prices of things.
Just tell a story.
We go to this little store, which is
the store
in town.
And I remember. So what town was this?
The little town is called Iliamna.
Iliamna,
Alaska.
How do you spell it?
ILI.
Iliamna.
Yep.
Iliamna.
Yeah. And it's next to
name, isn't it?
Yeah. It's one of the largest lakes in America, actually, is Lake Iliamna, lake that no one's heard of. It's one of the largest freshwater lakes in America.
I'm like, where's the Disney movie, right? Where's the Kingdom of Iliamna, Treasure
was
of Iliamna?
Was it Iliamna Trading Co.?
That's the store?
Is that the store?
That was probably the name of the store.
The store, yeah.
So I did take some photos.
Was it Blue Building?
I should have given you in advance. Yeah. So I could show them to you. So this box of
you got like
everything there has to be brought in by
plane. He has to show you the pictures because you would not believe him.
This
otherwise.
Box of Apple Jacks. $10.58.
$10.58. Box of Apple Jacks.
Family size frosted mini wheats.
Oh.
$10.
$22.50.
Jeez.
Whoa.
Half gallon of milk.
$16.
$13.49. One of the women.
You talk about food shortages. This is where
it's
going.
One of the women said,
"That's food shortage. Yeah.
Soda is cheaper than milk." And
disgusting.
She said, "And when you are seeing American moms put Sprite in a baby's bottle because they can't afford milk, we have a problem as a country." And then, but you can't open a pebble mine because it's bad for the environment. But the local native women who are literally putting Sprite in their kids' bottles because they can't afford milk, that's not my problem.
How far is this mine? You call it pebble mine?
Pebble mine.
How far is that from the lake?
Well, that was the one we had to take the helicopter out.
So it's like 40 miles or so?
Would
the pollution from the mine get into the lake?
No.
That's the argument.
I
got a question. Is there potential for geothermal in Alaska?
I can't answer. I think there's a. I think there's potential for geothermal everywhere, quite frankly, yeah. but I'm not positive how Alaska's looked into it.
I just looked up Iceland, and they're 64 degrees north, and Iljama is 60 degrees north.
Yeah.
And so I look at Iceland, and you know, having been there and talked to a lot of the locals, they said that geothermal energy really revolutionized and pulled people out of poverty. And yeah. It used to be a bunch of coal miners, just very, very poor. And then with geothermal, now they have greenhouses and they can produce more of their own food in their own country. And now people live a lot better.
Mm.
I wonder if the issue is just Alaska is severely underdeveloped in not even in terms of a copper mine, just in terms of sustaining human life.
Yeah.
Right. And that's
Let's
the issue.
Let's do it. It sounds awesome. Alaska rocks.
That's entirely the issue is that is underdevelopment. And it's because of these. And you talk to the locals. And even we met with local politicians, local leaders, and they all want this. They're like, you know, we're sitting with the local, the town folk, and they were just like, do you think we want to live like this and paying, you know, $30 for a gallon of milk?
Yeah.
You know, you think we don't want a bridge? You don't think we don't want nice roads? You don't, you think we don't want a doctor?
And there's a problem we're facing as a country. And I know I've talked about this before on the podcast, and it really is coming full circle to a lot of what we've been talking about tonight. And you said get out of cities early on. All of our policies are focused on living in big cities. You just said, what about revitalizing small town America, right? There's a reason why Akron came about. And you're like, well, it makes more sense to build brake pads in Mexico now. But for the people who are in Akron or whatever the industry was, that doesn't solve their problem. And what they're left with is poverty and unemployment and opioids, right? But they're, all of our policies are forcing people to America.
Well,
they're forcing people to learn to code, to learn modern. We don't want people to live in rural America.
Well, and
America, rural America is dying as a consequence.
We met this one small business owner, and not to get into all the details of that we met, just a, you know, local guy who ran a business out in one of the more rural towns, and he was told, he said, oh, well, if you move to the city, we'll give you tax breaks, we'll give you incentives, we'll build you a road, we'll hook you up to power, it'll be great. And he said, no, I don't want to do that. I want to be, this is where I choose to run my business. I want to be here. And they say, okay, then you'll have to pay us to get your road, to get your waste, to get your electricity hooked up. You'll have to pay us to build all that infrastructure and put it out there. But if we'll give you all the incentives if you come and move into the city.
Look at the way we bend over backwards when we want to build a baseball stadium or a football stadium. Look at the incentives that Cuomo and de Blasio gave Amazon to move into Queens. Imagine if they had made that for Buffalo or Utica or one of those upstate New York cities that is dying. No one cares about those cities because what do they want you to do? They want you to go to Queens.
This is what
they
want
you to come to DC. Well, we're not in DC, but they want you to go to urban America because that's where the power is. That's what the Green New Deal is structured for. Combustion engine. Who needs the combustion engine? Alaskans do if you want to get around. When is it?
Planes.
What is an electric car going to do in Alaska? Because, by the way, in case people forgot, the electric car does not work at below freezing temperatures. So Alaska can't use electric cars or electric planes, right? So we're having all of these policies
and
this
mentality.
The
electric car works below freezing. But
not below 20 degrees, it will not charge.
It won't charge.
You will not get a charge.
And we did have a discussion about degrees. The
electric planes. There were tons of stories during the Chicago polar vortex of people with Teslas saying WTF. I got my $140,000 Tesla plugged in, but it's negative temperatures, but it does not even catch a charge.
But you can like heat the garage that it's in and it'll work.
Maybe you could do that. I'm not sure. Wind turbines at the same temperature don't get a charge either. Now they're spinning up a storm. But at negative temperatures, they cannot get to generate electricity. Is that it's a huge deficiency.
That was a Texas issue.
But that's just technology. That was a part of the Texas issue. That's just the technology. Why can't we talk about
that? So you're saying I shouldn't drive my Tesla in the winter?
I'm saying at below freezing temperatures, your Tesla is useless. Now, I'm sure they will improve the technology eventually.
It's got a heater in it.
But that is a real problem right now.
Really?
Just like in cloudy weather, your solar panels don't do very well. And I know this because I have some solar gates on my farm. And when the snow caps cover, when we get good snowstorms and it snows on the panels, if you don't go out and clear it off and you let a whole day go by and then you try to open the gate, gate's not opening because it didn't get a charge.
I can't remember when I got my Tesla, but maybe it was before winter. This will be fun. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Oh, again, negative temperatures. I'm not talking about, you know, 30 degrees. I'm talking like zero.
It probably doesn't
get that cold here.
Our garage is peripherally heated. We don't have a heater in the garage, but it's connected to the house, so it still gets heat. So it'll probably be like 40 or 50 in the garage.
So you're probably okay.
It'll charge and it'll drive. That's all that really matters, right?
Yeah.
But I, you know, I worked for at O'Hare Airport, O'Hare Airport for American Eagle Airlines. They had, you know, the tugs that they used to cart around bags. They had electric ones,
yeah.
And they had gas ones. The electric ones barely worked in winter.
Interesting.
No joke. Yeah. So you'd have to charge them up, and you'd be driving. You got this really crappy LED that says like, you know, 70% left, and you're driving it. And in the winter, it would just go.
It was like on a golf course. If you can get the electric golf cart or the gas one, everyone tries to get the gas one.
Yep.
But again, these are just the policies that our government is forcing on us, that when you question them, kind of like when you questioned COVID, you're ostracized and you're told to shut your damn mouth, right? We have policies that are saying we're all going to be driving electric vehicles, but our strategic brownouts and blackouts because of electric shortages, like
look,
you see.
They don't care about that.
Well, what happens in California when whole neighborhoods are without their consent, they are shut off from the grid to protect the integrity of the grid, and you're plugging in your car and you wake up and now your car doesn't work, and you say, well, you're the one who forced me to get the damn electric car, and at the same time you're turning off my power.
But the future they want is where no one owns a car.
Which makes sense in urban America,
right? And
I didn't have a car growing up as a kid in Quebec. My parents' car. Thanks,
you'll
mom.
You'll pull
and
up an app and you'll type in your address, and a self-driving car will pull up, and you'll get in, and it'll take you where you want to go, and you'll get out.
I'm never getting in those self-driving
cars. On your list of approved
approved
locations, approved destinations, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so,
and then we track where you've gone.
And by the way,
so where has Jack Posobiec gone in his self?
Right, and then when Nancy Pelosi wants to find out all my movements from April 2020 to January 2021,
we shouldn't be giving them ideas, but why can't just we goes over to all it. Of your Uber? Why is it, you know what, if Uber is a good citizen, they would voluntarily turn over those records.
They would also have barcodes on the passenger door, so you got to scan before you get in the car.
Of course,
sure,
yeah.
To make sure you have your vaccine.
Exactly.
I once had somebody get in my car, so I was like, I was pulled over near, you know, building in Chicago, and then I was sitting in my car, like, typing in my GPS. My doors were unlocked because I had just got in. And then someone walks up, opens the door, and sits down in the back. And I was like, yo, what? And he's like, hey. And then I was like, dude, get out of my car. And he was like, is this Uber? And I was like, no. And he was like, oh man. And he got up and left. And I'm like, oh.
I think that's actually a Family Guy episode.
Legit happened to me.
That's scary.
I know. I unlocked my door. Like, wow.
It's scary that someone could be that stupid also, that you're like, don't look at the license plate. And
I know. I always check the license plate.
Say their name when you get in the car.
Yeah.
Say the driver's name. They say your name.
Uber for Ian. Well, I say Daniel, actually. But
say Ian.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is the future. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
Yeah.
You won't own your house. You'll rent it. You won't own the car. You'll
BlackRock
rent it.
BlackRock will own all the houses.
That's right.
And they want. And by the way, I don't know if you even heard all this, but because I was on a text thread, but I don't know if you were on it. That area that we're talking about right now in Pebble and Ilianma, BlackRock is all over it.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Really? They have been, because they were telling us, they said they had a private plane that flew. It was like a week before we were there. Mm. And they had this private jet that came in. And then there was another one that came a week, just a week ago, just last week. And then I was getting text, because I'm in communication with some of the people. We, you know, share contact info. And they said BlackRock just came back again. And
probably to make sure it never opens.
And they said
they probably own mining rights
and
in other countries.
They think they were at the lodge.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have their beautiful palatial, you know, fishing lodge and their hunting lodge for the 1% that's up there.
Tim.
And they said, well, who is this? And they said, well, because it's so small. You got to understand that, like, when somebody big like that comes to town, you know, everybody knows. But they checked the plane out, and it was, like, you know, double trusted, so you couldn't really tell. But everybody knew, hey, this is a BlackRock.
And a couple of billionaires who give hugely to these green groups to stop them from, to stop production, stop Michael Bloomberg, Bill Gates. Bezos, those three in particular give, Michael Bloomberg was give over billions of dollars to these green groups. You want to tell
the
story? Those three names.
The day after that happened.
Bloomberg.
And we were going to go on our way up to Prudhoe. And that's all the way up the north slope of Alaska. And I wake up, I do my morning. I'm sure you do the same thing. You wake up, you do your morning news scan, right? You know, it's what's hitting, what's popping, what's out there. What do I want to talk about, you know, for the timeline? And I see this one that hits, and it's like, is this a simulation? Bezos, Bloomberg, and Gates have all gone in and invested in an energy and mineral exploration firm.
Lithium and cobalt.
Lithium and cobalt in Greenland.
So we're going to buy it?
And so I'm sitting why it was one of the best ideas that came out of the Trump administration was buying Greenland. It would be like an Alaska too, right? You know, same idea. It would grant us so much access to another set of minerals. And who's going to go in there now? It's the billionaires. It's China is getting all over there.
Do you guys, real quick, do you guys know under what jurisdiction Greenland is?
Denmark, right?
Denmark, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Denmark's microscopic, and they got this massive
Greenland. They get this massive piece
we
of
need
land.
To liberate the people of Greenland from the oppressive colonization of the Kingdom of Denmark. Mm-hmm. This...
will be greeted as liberators.
Regime.
Those
will be greeted as liberators.
Those same billionaires.
Regime must end.
Those same billionaires will spend a free fortune Greenland. To stop mining in America, but they will open a mine in another country.
Did he set this up somehow to have this come out?
The timing was
the
impeccable.
The regime of Alaska must be toppled. Yes. We've discovered oil, and it's time to send in the troops.
Yeah, exactly.
Freedom.
We need freedom at all. Let's get the neocons on board. We're going to invade the United States.
One of my most despised.
We're going to drill here.
Yeah. One of my most despised political figures who ran for president last time was is Tom Steyer, and he ran as a greenie. I have a real loathing for him because he pushes the green envelope very, very hard. He's all about the green issue, but he is one of the largest investors. His hedge fund in Indonesian, Chinese, Malaysian coal and mineral rights companies, and it's like you have no problem if an 8-year-old girl in China.
Works what do you think BlackRock's investing in? But tripling their investments in China.
You will be damned if a guy in West Virginia will work in a coal mine, but like a 9-year-old girl in Malaysia, totally cool.
All for it, man.
And they all just applaud him and say he just loves the earth so much. Mm-hmm. That is why I started this organization, because it is such I want to use a vulgar phrase and I can't say it. It is such a lie. The whole green movement is one big scam. And I'm an environmentalist and I pride myself. We were talking earlier about my chickens and my sheep and my turkeys, and I love the earth. I'm an environmentalist. I love nature. I live off the grid. I have a well.
He get out of cities.
But we need to acknowledge that this is one huge lie. It's one huge grift, and grift just makes me so angry.
We should go to Super Chats.
Yes.
If you haven't already, smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, and go to TimCast.com.
Can I
become a member so that you can get access to the exclusive member segment coming up around 11 or so p.m.?
Before we throw that out, can I tell one quick other story just from Alaska? Because you have to. It's right. So we talk about the animals and environment. So we go up to Prudhoe Bay, and this is where the actual oil operation, the majority ones were found. These are more than Texas. You know, it's the Saudi Arabia of oil in our own borders, right? It's way up there. Arctic Circle, we're on the Arctic Ocean. I was going to jump in. He stopped me. I was totally going to jump in, by the way, in the water.
There are polar bears. And I was like, you know what?
I will fight.
I'm Jack Posobiec.
I will take out those polar bears. Yeah. But anyway, so we're driving around up there, and we go past the pipeline. And of course, remember, this is hugely controversial Trans-Alaska pipeline. They say we're going to want to put the pipeline in, right? And what did they say? It's going to hurt the caribou. It's going to hurt the reindeer. It's going to hurt them. As we're driving by, I'm sitting there, I'm like, did he set this up? We see a herd of caribou, like, frolicking in the meadow.
I programmed it right
in front of the pipeline.
Sending the caribou.
And I'm like, is he have a guy with, like, a walkie-talkie with the trailer that's, like, sitting back there? All right, we're driving by. It's like, you know, in Jurassic Park when they drive by but they couldn't see anything at first, you know. And then we go for another, you know, like, another 5 minutes, and we see muskox. And we see this whole family of muskox.
I had never seen a muskox
out there grazing and enjoying the land, and and like literally on the area that's right next to the oil rigs, right? And I'm sitting, and not even like out in the you know, out in the more wilderness part. And I'm sitting there like, he must have said, this is like when Chairman Mao would go in, you know, on the train to inspect the crop, you know, and they say, oh, everything's great, Chairman. Look how wonderful your policies have been, right? And then they like, you know, set everything up. One spot for him,
yeah.
Right? And it was no, we saw it.
What do you think?
I saw it with my own two
eyes. Bay? Would you go with it? Would you take us? Would you go up with us?
You know, if
come on, Lydia, we'll all do a trip up there.
When Starlink is available, we can take the show on the road with the
you got to do a week. You do a week and you do one night in each different spot. You do
we have to drive there in the mobile production. It would take us like a month to get there.
Oh,
We'll fly you up
We
there.
Can ship the car
well,
and
no,
then go
but
fly
the problem
up
is we can't, you know, we do more than just this show here. We got a bunch of shows. So it's really difficult for me to travel.
We could ship the car and then fly up when it's there.
Exactly.
Ship the trailer?
It wouldn't be easy. It'd be expensive.
We'll get you a trailer. They have plenty of trailers in Alaska.
We'll build the Alaska studio.
Yes.
So that we can fly there on the weekend.
We'll get you a studio.
Castle North.
And then our guests, you know, when we have people who come on the show, they'll fly from D.C. instead of just driving, and they'll fly to Alaska.
They'll fly to Alaska, right?
Yes.
You know, I mean.
Tim, you're coming.
I don't think the answer is a 100% no. I think it's entirely possible that we could do a small remote studio. It's not particularly expensive to get a base level setup for a podcast. And so considering, I suppose the pulling the resources in is the hard part.
Yeah.
But getting the space, getting the internet's the hard part. So we need Starlink.
I already paid my deposit on Starlink. I hope it's soon.
Me too.
They cool. said it's supposed to be this year. And
well, it's already up. It's in New York, it's up.
Oh,
so great. If you're a New York resident, you probably already got your Starlink.
I'm not.
We're lower on the East Coast, so they're saying late this year. So we're a month or two away to getting Starlink and 100 megabits up and down.
My internet.
You can put it. You're not supposed to do this, but apparently you can put it on a car. And so long as you're within the satellite range, because they're
you'd have to be under the, yeah.
My internet is awful.
So once it goes nationwide, we'll be able to drive around the entire country and always have high-speed internet, even
right,
in
the
middle of the
difference,
desert.
The difference is that you would be, instead of, so when you're traveling now, you're switching between towers as you're constantly going.
It's not possible to do this on networks.
What this would do is you would be switching between satellites as they go over.
We could theoretically do a show in.
So you'd be doing handoffs.
You know, get like a tour bus.
It'd be handoffs, yeah.
But with a satellite, there's not. You have 500 miles before you get to a handoff.
I like that.
That's the range.
Well, obviously, yeah. The range is obviously different than a cell phone tower.
Yeah, so once Earthlink is nationwide, even up into Alaska, we can drive anywhere.
So they have Earthlink and Starlink? You said when Earthlink is
live. Oh, Starlink.
Yeah.
You mean Starlink.
We got to build an Earthlink now.
Yeah. No, I think Earthlink is a different satellite company. Oh. Let's go to Super Chats.
Yeah, that's the dial-up.
Jurassic Josh says, when Saki said that no Americans are stranded in Kabul, does that mean she's lying, or did she mean that 15,000 Americans are just dead already?
So it is a lie, and it's a lie because she's using weasel words, right? When she says they're not stranded, that she's, you know, then trying to say, like, well, because we're there to help them.
We're trying to get them out.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's playing a semantic game.
Here's the way I explain it.
Which is a lie.
When Ian, you know, he goes to the mall, and his car breaks down. He calls me and says, yo, my car broke down. I'm stranded at the mall. I say, hey, I'll come and pick you up. But there's a bunch of traffic, so I'll try and get there, all right? Then as I'm leaving, I'm getting in my car. And, you know, someone asks me, like, oh, hey, where are you going? Ian is stranded at the mall, so I'm going to go try and pick him up. Now compare that to what's happening in Afghanistan. A bunch of Americans have no way out because the airport's locked down. And Jen Psaki says, we're going to go and try and pick them up. Therefore, they're not stranded.
Because we're on our way.
No, they're literally
Help
stranded.
Out on the way.
That's why you are going.
And just to throw this out there, I've actually been told that it's you're hearing a lot about these like private groups that are trying to go over and get people out. It's the State Department that's shutting down a lot of this stuff. It's not even the military. It's they're getting in. I've spoken to members of Congress about this. I've spoken to active duty people about this. It's State Department that's coming up doors because they want everything to be centralized. They want everyone to be accounted for In a regular situation, sure, that would be fine. But they're sticking with the deadline. And come August 31st, we are going to see stampedes. We're going to see bloody altercations. We're going to see shootouts. It is going to be a human waste.
And there are still several thousand people who are in the remote villages that haven't even gotten to Kabul.
Right.
People are fleeing to Kabul right now.
And Bagram Air Force Base is 45 miles out.
Right.
Middle of nowhere.
They abandoned it in the middle of
middle of nowhere where there were people who were telling Millie and from what I heard that Austin wanted to do this is send in the Rangers and take it back.
Wow.
Jump in, take it back. The Taliban doesn't have like battalions, you know, that are like marching around, right? You go in there and you do Ranger stuff and you take care of it. Right.
Let's
and they said
more.
No, they didn't want a Black Hawk down.
We got I heard that. Yeah. Deli Oplis says, what do you believe would happen to wokeness if the U.S. government collapsed tomorrow? How would this affect the broader Western world?
I don't know if woke is an intrinsically American thing. I mean, I think America is pushing it a lot more than other countries, but I think it's a collapse of Western value thing. So maybe its ringleader would would slow it down if America was gone. But it's another manifestation of
well, when he's saying government, I kind of get the sense though that he means more of like the American system.
Mm-hmm. I think what right? would evaporate.
I think it would be disappear. Oh, really? I mean, think of any post-apocalyptic movie or series you've ever seen. Does anybody drive up to the outpost and say, you know, hey, let me in? You know, the cannibals are after me, and they say, well, what are your pronouns? You know,
it'll collapse overnight.
It's not like that. It disappears.
Wokeness only exists within the secure bubble of the yes. U.S. You know, imperialist state.
I feel like there would be armed militia roving
woke militias,
yeah, that are like submit or they just massacre people. If there's no rule of law,
there would be. Listen. I don't think you're wrong about that. I think there'd be an extent of that.
You're not wrong, but that would be like the first week. And then all of the commando ex-military veterans who are anti-woke would laugh at their failed tactics and their inexperience, and they get swept out.
But we're saying just America's gone, Canada's fine, England's fine, Australia. I think America's slow to the wokeness.
Well,
I think in
America it would.
Oh, in America. Yeah. Oh, I think I'm worldwide. Oh, in America it'd be gone.
I'm talking like a full-on collapse. Four scenarios.
Totally gone.
He was in the Rangers, obviously, and he says, whenever I bring up violence,
and you have like woke refugees.
A way forward. He keeps reminding me that when it comes to violence, 1% of the people are extremely good at it. And that is who's going to take control if there's ever a vacuum.
Look, I always say this, and I'll say it again. You know, people want to get into that conversation about, country versus cities, what would happen. There obviously are a lot of guns in the country, in rural areas. There's a lot of guns in cities too.
Yeah.
Right? And there's groups called gangs, and you can't overlook that.
All right. T says, if you read this, I'll subscribe to the website. I got you.
There you go.
Now you gotta be a member.
There you go. That's it. You're done. You're done now. You're done.
Joshua Ryman says, terrifyingly starting to remind me of Saddam and the Ba'ath Party purge of Iraq. Wake up, America. We are all next. Mm. Yeah. So do you guys know that what was that all like, the history of that?
That was like when we went into Iraq.
Well, that was the U.S.
Yeah, the U.S. purged the Ba'ath Party, Saddam's cabinet, basically, and then they all became unemployed. They created even more unemployment. Then they became the Taliban.
But eventually, ISIS. Well,
ISIS.
So there was no. Well, first it was Al Qaeda in Iraq. So there was no Al Qaeda in Iraq prior to the invasion and the toppling of Saddam's regime. Saddam's regime had been against them, sort of like these radical Islamists. And then when you forced the Ba'ath Party, and keep in mind, if you were a party member, you were out, right? You're out of government, you're out of the military, right? So you've got all these people now who are trying to figure out something to do, and they see the oppressors, they see the occupiers, they view the U.S. as this occupying force, and this gets into the failures of COIN, this gets into fourth generation warfare, that, you know, if you look like the occupier, and this is, by the way, the same for the Taliban, right? You know, in a sense, and I'm just talking about the 4GW aspect of it, that if you are an 18-year-old, right, an Afghan boy, and you are 18 today, you have no idea what 9/11 was. Mm. You just know that there has been some country that's occupying your land, that doesn't speak your language, that doesn't believe in your religion, that has all sorts of values and demands that they're making of you that have no connection whatsoever to your cultural experience or the way that your people live, and they are walking around, marching around with their guns telling you how to live, right? That's your view.
All right. DJM says, keep it the good work, Tim. Regarding COVID and vaccine mandates, what worries me is if vaccines and boosters are mandatory, a tyrannical government can put undesirables on no vax lists. Mm.
Watch Gattaca. Just watch.
Is that what they do?
Yeah, it's great. Great
well,
film.
It's not about vaccines, but what it is about is
DNA.
They call you valids and invalids. So if you are a valid, that means it's about eugenics, right? So it's you have good genes, you are a designer baby, your parents set you up for success. Versus if you are a natural birth, what they call a faith child or a love child,
right. Yeah.
Then you're considered an invalid, mm-hmm. and you are sent to you're a second class citizen because you didn't even have your booster,
isn't there like a pilot who's lying or something? Like
the whole crux of the story is Ethan Hawke, and he was a natural birth, but his brother was a designer baby. And then he, what he does is he becomes a, I think they call it a borrowed ladder is the phrase they use, and where he actually steals the identity, not steals, but it's, he takes the identity of someone else so that he's able to get into this, it's sort of like the space program. Yeah. And then he has to compete and physically and mentally and do everything at the level of one of the Valids, all while protecting his own genetic material, because if anyone finds any DNA, right, et cetera. Yeah. Gore Vidal's in it, by the way.
It's like what they're doing now when you try to steal someone's COVID passport to get into a bar in Manhattan.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, that's a felony.
It's really
because what happens is that somebody who was an athlete and Jude Law's character gets into a car accident.
Well, don't give away the whole story.
No, it's just this
you
setup.
Want people
this
to
concept.
Watch it.
This is the setup.
You want
this
people
setup.
To watch the movie.
So he gets into an accident. He's not using his identity anymore. So he says, "Well, I'll pay to, you know, let somebody use my identity."
Yeah. Mm. All right, film. Ethan Krause says, "Tim,
amazing film."
Ethan Krause says, "Tim, I doubt you're aware of this, but the governor of Guam is trying to mandate vaccines for everyone 12 and older, similar to those in New York and L.A. People here are speaking up and taking a stand against lockdown.
Good
against lockdown, Lou."
Lot of good memories in Guam. Spent, I was deployed there twice, or, you know, stationed there and then deployed out to various points of East Asia. You know, Agana, Agat, Santa Rosita, all the different, or Santa Rita, excuse me, Santa Rita, all the nice little towns and areas. Beautiful, beautiful island. And, you know, it is not cheap to get there, but, if anyone has the opportunity, highly, highly recommend visiting Guam.
All right, let's see what
and
we
a
got.
Lot, by the way, a lot of World War II history there as well. Oh, a lot cool. of World War II history.
Never Summer says, Jack, you should set up a dead man switch with all the dirt you have.
You think I don't have one? like something happens to me, I can't even begin to describe the things that my network of people that are currently in the White House and the government would do should something happen to me. Oh. I'm just going to leave it at that.
All right, Jordan Chapman says, been listening since 2015. Tim, in regards to anime, quick question, subbed or dubbed? I'm a subbed guy myself. I wanted to ask a long time ago, but I'm a third shift guy and I'm not normally awake for the live Shimcast. Subbed, definitely.
Subbed, yeah.
I like dubs. I like the voice actors, but subbed is, you know, the way to go.
Plus, listening since 15, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic.
Dubs has gotten better. Awesome. The dubs have gotten better. The dubs have gotten they're not like they used to be.
But you know what? Like, for
one, I'm not a huge anime guy, but I will just say in general, dubs have gotten better.
I like subs for everything because I like actually hearing other languages.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And also, you know,
if you're learning a language too, it's actually a great, like when I was learning Chinese, that's one thing I did a lot.
Absolutely. One of the guys that I worked with in Turkey learned English and I asked him how, and he says, hey, which Family Guy?
Yeah.
No joke. No, I'm like, is that it? He's like, that's
so
it.
Does he speak with a Boston accent?
No. He's got a Turkish accent. But you know what I love? You know, I used to watch anime a lot more, all subbed. I actually started learning Japanese. I've lost a lot of it. But then it's really interesting when you watch it, when you watch the subs and you see the translations and you're like, hey, that's not what it said. Like they missed nuance or context. Mm. Or often what they do is they'll change the translation a little bit. Because I think it contextually makes
sense
to Americans.
This is, you know, we've got my wife, the linguist, who's sitting over here. She's like speaks eight languages, you know. So I'm like, that's really the one you asked that question.
Watching,
and she just said that, yeah, like a lot, because she watches a lot of things that where she speaks, she knows both languages,
right.
And she just says like, no, that like,
do you speak French? So I was watching Amelie.
Yeah,
you guys have seen Amelie, right?
Right, I have not.
And I watched it with a French guy, and he kept pointing out where they oversimplified the sub.
Mm. Right, exactly. People, yeah,
you know, so it was really, really interesting when there was one specific part, and he was like, "Oh wow, they cut out like a whole sentence," and I was like, "Really? Like, I don't even know. I don't speak French.
Exactly.
I have no idea."
Yeah,
it's amazing. All right, let's see where we are. Camel of the Mojave says, "Don't understand. We have to kill puppies, or people might try to go outside and adopt them." Yeah, you guys heard about what happened in Australia.
That's unbelievable.
Is it because they think COVID's in the dogs?
Was it really puppies?
It was rescue dogs. But
dogs.
They were worried that people were going to leave their house and go to the shelter. They were like, well, you're not supposed to leave your house, so let's just kill all the dogs, and that way no one will leave their house.
Oh, my God.
And they put down several
cut off people's
dogs.
Legs so they can't walk.
Exactly.
Outside. What the heck?
Simon Ecker says, I'm in New Zealand and we're basically Australia light at the moment. Mm. Our prime minister is using lines like be kind and team of 5 million to force people to do their bidding. Authoritarianism is running rife and it's awful. Well, I think the sad reality for you is that everybody knows New Zealand is Australia's Canada.
So I'm sorry.
When Australia is going to do something, you know, New Zealand. No, the reality is that New Zealand's actually thousands of miles away from Australia. And people don't know that. When you fly between them, you're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
The Pacific is big.
I'm married to an Australian, and I always joke, like, do you take the bridge when you go to New Zealand? it doesn't get any laughs, but I think it's funny.
General biochemistry. Ooh, with some criticism. So cops are supposed to lose their jobs to stand up, but you won't say certain words on YouTube so you don't lose your channel. Lead the charge. Well, the officers, there's a big difference between saying, there's a 50-year-old woman with a firearm who accidentally crossed one of the borders. Let's put her in prison. And someone being like, hey, they're censoring us, so I set up a website where we can speak uncensored. I want to keep this channel running so we can keep reminding people that these conversations will continue to happen in a place where we're safe and protected. So big difference between resist and, well, I'm going to blindly enforce violations of the Constitution. But, you know, look, am I happy with YouTube censoring everybody? No. And that's why we decided to create a website where this wouldn't happen. So these cops can simply say, I will not violate the Constitution. And I will tell you this. The big challenge with censorship is, do we sacrifice the 99 things we need to say for the one thing that we need to say? And it really isn't easy just to say yes or no. If the solution right now is we can create a website, use YouTube as a main platform to show people that we're here and we're talking, and then let them know the website exists where we can do independent journalism, it works. But I will tell you this. If it ever comes to a point where we have hard and direct proof of something specific, and it means that we're going to get banned, we're going to say it. I made videos about that CIA guy whose name we can't say. I won't say it now because at this point I think it's years later and it's pointless. And I got into a fight with people at YouTube when they deleted my videos simply for talking about a news story. I actually threatened to republish the video on every channel at every hour I normally would, so I'd have like 6 uploads in one day.
Well,
like, try me.
Well,
but do I sacrifice everything?
You know, to your point as well, that, you know, there are other localities that are actively trying to recruit police officers that, number one, aren't enforcing stuff like this, and number two, aren't going to persecute you the way they persecute, like, a Derek Chauvin for doing your job and following the guidelines that are set up before you. And you could then have the option of going to one of those where, A, you're going to be treated better, and B, you're probably not going to be asked to enforce these kinds of things.
Well, we got a super chat from Adam Wayne.
So he I'm not saying, by the way, you know, for all the cops that, you know, that follow me, I get it. I feel you. But when I say get out of cities, it applies to you too.
Adam Wayne says, Tim is right. I quit law enforcement after a successful career when Virginia enacted red flag laws.
Wow.
My Good. Reputation was destroyed, but I'm proud. You must stand for something or you will fall for anything.
Wow.
There is the challenge, though, in that, you know, if you have no choice, you quit. But then what's left? They rehire someone who's willing to do those awful things.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not easy, right? In this instance, maybe to the cops out there, and a lot of them have already done this. So I'm not trying to disrespect literally every person who's a cop. I'm saying that there are cops who do these things. If you are a cop and they say, hey, violate the Constitution, you just go, I'm not going to do it. And then be like, well, then, you know, fire me or, you know, go to your union or resist. And then if they boot you, they boot you. So I'll put it this way. Perhaps the cops shouldn't quit. Perhaps they should just refuse unlawful or unconstitutional orders, as much as I won't quit YouTube, but I'll create a place where we can continue to do the right thing. If YouTube bans me, we've got an alternative and we'll accept that. And if you get fired because you refuse to violate the law or the Constitution, you know, well, then you stood up for what you believed in.
I've had people that I used to serve with in the Intel community that have come up to me since I left, and they've said, Jack, you know, what you do now is what you were meant to do, and we love every minute of serving with you, but what you're doing now is, you know, everybody thought I was crazy. Like, you should have seen the looks I got when I was like, I'm putting in papers. They're like, I had a government job. Like, you know, what are you going to do to me, right? I could have stayed the rest of my life. And, you know, they're like, you want to go do what? You know, exactly when I started getting, you know, offers and kind of had this other path open up. But now I've actually had people come back to me and say, you know what, you made the right choice. Especially if we look at what's going on in the IC now.
Justice Stye says, hey, Tim, you should have G. Edward Griffin on with Michael Malice and Alex Jones. Yes.
That sounds great.
Yes, we should.
It's a good show.
It sounds great.
That would be a fantastic show. The new studio that we're building, we have a much bigger table. We can accommodate up to 8 different people.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't plan on having 8 people.
That's a lot of voices.
Thank you.
Right. It'd be way too much. But, you know, we have 5 right now. And sometimes, you know, we got to, Tanya's over here. She can get a microphone. Right? We could always just, so what we're actually planning on doing is just that. We're going to have a couch in the back where.
You see, that actually is a good option. Then you could kind of, you know.
There would be a microphone for you. You know, so when guests are here and they're, you know, chiming in periodically, they'd be a part of the conversation.
I like that.
Yeah, we're almost. We're almost at the end. You should say, you know,
you want to say
hi real quick?
Of course.
Come on, say hi. Here she is, folks.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Tanya.
So what do you like better, subbed or dubbed?
Subbed.
Subbed, always?
Yes. Watch all the movies. I love how we watched all the series, Japanese. Remember that?
That's right. There's this Japanese detective series we watched. We did all subbed, like the whole, all the way through.
Cool.
Question, though. What, of all the languages you know, what's your favorite?
Do you have a favorite language?
Ooh, I'm a linguist. I just love languages, period.
It's Italian. Just so you know, it's Italian. She loves speaking Italian. When we were in Italy, you were like, you were doing the fingers. There it is.
Do you dream in lots of different languages?
Actually, two languages. German, Russian, English.
Huh.
Just two.
Oh, like a German-Russian hybrid?
What languages do you speak?
那你为什么不会做梦用中文的呢?
因为我的中文不太好。
我觉得非常好的，非常好，我可爱的。
All right, all right, enough showing off. We get it. We speak a lot of languages. We get it.
All right, let's see. Let's read. We got Ocean Rescue says, Tim, I'm a rescue swimmer in the Coast Guard. It's difficult for us to acquire new aircraft as we rely heavily on Navy hand-me-down helos. Wow.
Yeah,
the Blackhawks and Taliban control are badly needed here for our own aging fleet to save American lives at home. Hey. Nation building in Alaska.
I saw one. They had like a, it was like a meme, but it was like a, you know, those Facebook marketplaces and like $80 million, one used helicopter.
Could you imagine? It's like we've had to abandon our Air Force base because American citizens have overrun it, I guess. Yeah. We're going to ask them nicely to not.
Yeah, and the State Department earlier, they made some comment like, well, they do have a lot of that equipment, but, you know, they'll have a hard time getting parts. They'll have a hard time keeping it up. And someone was like, Iran still uses the equipment they stole
the
in 1979.
Iran still uses the F-4 Venom 2s.
Clearly, they find parts. You know,
were,
so.
Some of those were built in the 50s, by the way.
Yeah.
The platforms were built in the 50s. Iran got them in 79 during the revolution.
And they're still up and running.
That's made better than
Brian Knowles says, I understand your argument, Tim, but these restaurants and mom-and-pop shops in New York have been crippled for over a year. Their businesses are hanging on by a thread and probably near bankruptcy. And you know what? That wouldn't have been the case if they all collectively said no.
Yeah.
It's because they complied with unlawful and unconstitutional government edicts.
So I get what you're saying too.
They will reap the benefits of their own actions.
It's all what you're also saying is that
leave
you're
the cities.
You know, not just leave the cities, but like stand together and fight back. Right? If you do that,
nonviolent civil disobedience.
Yeah.
Is like an American pastime.
Yeah, and I'm saying this lightly. I realize I'm not a restaurant owner, but I mean, how many bars did I go into starting at 15 that they never carded me once? You know, and now all of a sudden it's like, whoa, we need to see your ID.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like there are a lot of laws that you kind of turn a blind eye to in that industry. So, no, I'm not going to stop people at the door and say, I'm sorry, I need to get your everyone here vaccinated? Yeah, okay, everyone come on inside. Just like when they ask you, are you over 21? Yes, I am, sir. Okay, good. You know, I'm sorry.
Well, and actually what you just said, that nonviolent civil disobedience, right? This is, you know, I say this as a Catholic, and a lot of people get this part of the Bible wrong. When someone slaps you, turn the other cheek, right? Jesus isn't saying that, oh, you should just submit and be tolerant and let people do whatever they want. It's no, he's talking about defiance, right? It's that defiance of, okay, you've slapped me, I'm not going to submit, slap me again.
Right.
I've heard
keep doing it.
That's because the Romans would use one hand to wipe their butt, and so they didn't touch people with that.
Not the Romans, but the people that.
And if you,
of the region.
So if you hit him with one hand, it was natural to strike someone with one hand. You'd turn the other cheek so that they had to touch you with the other hand.
That's correct. Yeah.
And was it the filthy hand? And so it was kind of like an insult to the person, like, yeah,
right, so
use
it was
your filthy hand.
Right, so you're actually putting – this is – it's more contextual, right? But the idea being that Then they would have to strike you with the other hand. So that's an insult to them because you would have had to lower, because if you were not someone of the same social status, then I wouldn't be able to treat you as someone of the same social status because you're just someone I can slap around.
All right. Stephen Schelk says, Tim, geothermal works great in Iceland because it's a volcanic island and is a dividing point for tectonic plates. So the crust is thinner there. It also smells like farts.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Have you been there?
I've not.
But Alaska also has huge volcanic activity.
They have volcanic activity right now.
We passed three active volcanoes on the flight to Iliamna.
Yeah.
So.
Three at once. What do they call it? This is not normal. This is very, very weird to have three active volcanoes in a chain all go up at once, according to this article.
And that's why they also have copper. Because copper is only found in seismic regions, right? That's why Chile has copper. So they're like, why don't we just dig for copper somewhere else? That's not how
I hear Australia is like the number one copper mining country. Then Chile is number two. Is that?
I know Australia has a ton of coal. It's the world's largest coal producer. I wouldn't be surprised if they have copper. I mean, Australia has everything and snakes.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
All right. We'll do a couple more here. We got Tina Collette saying, Jack, I live in Wyoming. I see deer and antelope scratching themselves on gas wells. We have uranium and rare earth mineral, but they are literally on sacred ground. Google Bear Lodge, Devil's Tower.
Wow.
Interesting. All right, we'll do this one more. We got Eric A. He says, Ian, I appreciate your high ideals, but we're coming to the hard men history. You need to harden up. We've been comfy far too long, at ease at having someone else fight for them. High ideals are a luxury of a comfortable society, I'd imagine. But yeah, absolutely.
I agree. I think of the founding fathers a lot. Like Ben Franklin didn't fight. I don't know if he ever picked up a rifle and killed anyone, but he stayed positive and wrote documents that would allow us, like, we're working on the Fediverse, and I know that we're getting closer to completion. This can, like, you know, liberate people's social media if you can subscribe to people with crypto. And
remember, Franklin was a lot older.
Yeah, he was like 30 years older than Jefferson.
Yeah, he's considerably older.
Like 70. Yeah.
So he was kind of like the old, you know, the wise old man of the group at the time. But, you know, of course, Washington fought, but, you know, Jefferson, you know, didn't fight himself. But right. So Franklin was sort of that, you know, that older, wiser, I'm going to try to, you know, make sure that I can keep the North and South together, you know, work over the Declaration.
Kind of build a system.
Make this all make sense.
Assuming that we won, build a system that will sustain that new thing that we won. Mm. Then it will be easier to win because the system will already be there ready for us to support it. That's my mentality.
My friends, thank you all so much. It's been a blast hanging out with everybody and for everybody watching. Make sure you go to timcast.com, sign up. We're going to have that members segment coming up, hopefully about an hour or so. But, we got a lot of conversation to be had, so maybe it'll go a little long. You'll get a big bonus episode. We had Bannon on the other day, and we went, I think, a little bit over an hour.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's working. I'm pretty sure it is, but sometimes we get weird, you know, encoding issues. But you can follow the show at TimCastIRL. You can follow me personally at TimCast. You want to shout out Daniel?
Daniel Turner, and you can follow me at Daniel Turner PTF for Power of the Future on Twitter, and same with all the other profiles, and it is always fun to be here. Thank you.
Right on, man. Thanks for coming.
This is Jack Wasobi. You can follow me at humanevents.com. You can also read my stuff in the halls of the U.S. Congress, where they're going to be going over it and releasing it, from Nancy Pelosi to Bernie Johnson and the rest of this. No, but we're going to fight back. We are going to take a stand. We're not complying with this whatsoever. Like I said, I've been to Gitmo once. Send me again. I don't care.
On the other
side. But when I go again, this time around, I'm going to make sure to get the best night's sleep in the whole wide world because I will be bringing my MyPillow along with me.
Would they allow that?
I'll smuggle it in. I'll get it in. You wouldn't believe the stuff that got smuggled in at Gitmo.
That's crazy.
You have a promo code in case people want to buy.
It's promo code POSO.
POSO.
P-O-S-O. Yeah.
Promo P-O-S-O. Code POSO.
I bought a bunch of towels because we needed a bunch of towels because we have the sauna. We have, you know, a lot of people who are a couple dozen people here. I think I ordered like 20 towels.
Excellent purchase.
Have they come?
Oh, yeah. They're fantastic.
I actually, somebody was telling me, I just got in the comments that they had ordered some towels and they were having, hadn't come yet.
Big old box came and
okay,
I was
good.
Like, awesome.
Okay, good.
Thanks for coming, guys. This Alaska thing was really eye-opening.
that was really interesting to kind of visualize. I knew you would be into that. It's so cool. I could see what you were seeing, how you were describing it. It was very, very enlightening.
I think it's particularly relevant for Ian because his nickname is Ian.
Old Australia.
The Destroyer of Worlds.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Come and get me, Crossland.
So any conversation about the destruction of the planet in any capacity, Ian just goes, yes.
I think this is the next hour, isn't it? Yeah. Definitely. It's Ian.
And there's a huge graphite mine in Alaska, Graphite 1, that they're still trying to open as
really?
Well. Yes. Huge graphite.
Ian's going to move to Australia.
I thought
Ian's
about like, moving there. I just like, I like the more. Hot weather. Mm. Is it really cold?
Alaska?
Yeah. It's Alaska, man. It's definitely nine months out of the year.
On the North Slope, it was 38 degrees.
Yeah, I need this hot sun. I do well in the hot. But I'm down. Thanks. Ian Crossland, check it out.
But they do have volcanoes.
That's
so
hot.
You just hang out of the volcanoes. That's legit. You get your heat. The old fashioned way.
A little too hot.
If we could stick a giant needle into the side of the volcanoes and sieve it out, we'd get all that geothermal heat.
They were like, oh my God, what's going on? It's Ian. He's here with the graphene needle. You'll be like that last guy in Pompeii.
Get me some.
Yep. And you guys may also follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids. I just wanted to say, on the topic of life being hard, we fail to recognize that the world is a very, very hard place. Violence is the norm. Poverty is the norm. We are incredibly blessed. We've been living in a bubble for years now. Our parents lived in a bubble. Our grandparents even did to some extent. It's about to get hard.
Mm.
And I'm a little concerned how we're going to respond to that, but I think that we'll rise to the occasion. I guess we'll see what happens.
All right, everybody. We'll see you over at timcast.com for the member segment. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye.